It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We have put together a great panel for you. Renee Ritchie from iMore, Ian Thompson from The Register, my buddy Jeff Jarvis from the City University of New York, and This Week in Google. We have so much to talk about. The new Google and products they just announced, the exploding Note 7. It's getting worse. It's getting worse for Yahoo, too, and Twitter. It seems like nobody wants to buy it. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 583, recorded Sunday, October 9th, 2016. Party on, Zuck! This Week in Tech is brought to you by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect files on your computer or server with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free, no credit card needed, at Carbonite.com today. Use the offer code TWIT to get 2 free bonus months if you decide to buy. And by GoToMeeting. Why just phone conference when you can go high tech? Better meetings start with GoToMeeting. HD video means you'll never miss a thing. Screen sharing keeps everyone on task. Don't phone it in. GoToMeeting. Start your free 30-day trial at GoToMeeting.com today. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the week's tech news. And I am thrilled to have my good buddy Ian Thompson from theregister.co.uk here.
Always good, Leo. Always good.
Always a pleasure. Ian will be back Saturday, too, I think, to do the screensavers.
Yes, we're doing new screensavers together. Yeah. And
but bad news, and I was worried that maybe you wouldn't come back after you learned that the British shop in Petaluma has closed.
It's closed. Oh.
You didn't know.
No. I told him. I shouldn't have told him. He's never coming back.
Damn it. Where am I going to get my Twixes from now? Where am I going to get my
PG Tips?
They did great pasties there as well. That's just wrong.
You know, pasties mean something different in the UK than it does in the United States. I just want to let you know.
That's a savory meat pie, then.
A savory meat pie, that I understand.
So what are pasties over here?
I probably don't want to say. Also with us, this is the all-international edition today. From Montreal and iMore.com, our good friend Renee Ritchie, a regular on Mac Break Weekly. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Leo. Welcome back. Hey. Good to have you back.
Even though I was all over the world, Russia and Finland and the Netherlands, I was reading iMore the whole time because I had with me an iPhone 7.
Awesome.
And I had to learn how to use it. The thing, there's a lot of changes. And then I got the new Watch OS and the new Apple Watch. And then I'm back to iMore to figure out what band to get, because you're the king of bands.
Yeah, I have so many, Leo.
The band they ship, by the way, with this most expensive Apple Watch now, the edition.
Yes.
Is the worst band ever. It's a dirty gray rubber band.
Yeah, I would really like a ceramic white band to go. Like, I'm figuring the price would double to make that band, but I would still like that option.
Even if it were just the same color as the watch, white, but it's dirty gray. Anyway, that's a first world problem, I think. That's the ultimate first world problem. You know, this watch was $1,300, but the band is just rubber.
Yeah.
It's a non-combustible Apple product, though, Leo, so you're safe.
Is that true? Fluoroelastomer does not burn?
Steve Jobs.
Oh, I don't know.
Doing 45 revs per minute at the moment. But
Well, what does burn, apparently, is the Note 7, and this is terrifying, the replacement Note 7s. Now, I really want to emphasize I want to know more. Because maybe this isn't an official replacement. This is the first one we heard about, a fire on the Southwest plane. It wasn't plugged in. It was in a guy's pocket. Started to heat up. He pulled it out, threw it on the floor. It burst into flames, burning the carpet of the plane and the subflooring, forcing the evacuation. Fortunately, the plane was at the gate. Everybody got off. Right now, the fire department has that phone, but Samsung says we want it, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission says we want it. But that's not the last story. There have been two more
reported.
I asked Jerry right before the show. So Jerry Hildebrand from Android Central has been following it all weekend, and there have been 5 in the U.S. now and 4 in Asia.
Yeah.
Two of them just in the last 12. He said, as I was writing one story, 2 more happened, which is where we are right now.
At this point, you got to think maybe these are the replacement phones.
I've spoken to Samsung. I've spoken to the consumer protection people. Neither of them have had the phones in their hands
moment.
But it's looking increasingly likely as though they rushed out the replacement. They didn't think this one through properly. And they're in a whole world of hurt from a branding
position. Here's the conspiracy theory. They rushed it out. They got it out within a week, right? They started shipping on the 21st of September. And I talked to somebody today on the radio show who had a replacement phone. And his theory, and I think it may not be far off, he says, you know, this phone doesn't hold a charge very well. I think they changed the firmware but did not retool the phone. And, of course, that maybe makes sense to do it that quickly. Yeah. Just like the iPhone is a sealed phone. You'd have to take out the entire battery, but probably also the charging assembly. I don't know if they could get replacement phones in that quantity out within a week. Maybe all they did was change the firmware.
Yeah, there's something deeply fishy going on about this because, I mean, it was there for the taking. Apple was going to get a lot of flack with the iPhone 7 coming out, dropping the audio jack and not really doing that much else to it. The market was theirs for them, and I think they're just like, we've got to get this out now so it's, you know, we can win over disgruntled Apple users. And they seem to have screwed the pooch on
this
one.
Quite the opposite. Now, I think a lot of people took their refund on the Note 7 and bought iPhone 7s. And
we'll fool them, but
anybody who took a replacement phone, by the way, all the U.S. carriers, and I would imagine this is true worldwide, are saying, fine, bring the replacement phone back. We'll make it whole. We'll either give you a refund or
AT&T won't even give you a replacement Note 7 anymore. No. They just pulled the plug. Yeah.
Really?
As I would expect. And at this point, how bad is this for Samsung, Renee?
So there's a couple of things to pull apart here. One is that we don't know very much about this. Like Samsung owns 20% of the battery company that made this thing, Samsung SDI. But batteries are very complicated. Lithium-ion batteries especially are very complicated beasts. And there were stories about maybe the positive and negative polarity weren't properly separated, and that was causing an unusual amount. There's always some failures, always some critical failures. Like you see every phone. iPhones have occasionally burnt. LG, almost any phone, you can go find a few incidents of this happening to. But this was happening with alarming regularity, which made them think that maybe the chemistry was wrong. And there were rumors, of course, that they did rush it to market to try to beat Apple to the punch here. But it's also possible that what they thought was wrong is not what was in fact wrong with the battery. And whether it was firmware or they switched supplies, because apparently supplies from the other companies that they were pulling from weren't having these incidents. But it just could be that they failed to identify the proper problem, or the problem was much deeper than what they thought there would it be, because those replacement phones did come to market really, really, really fast. Yeah. And now, I mean, yeah, Samsung hasn't said anything. The Farber hasn't said anything. But The Verge has done a great job. They've gotten photos of the boxes. They've checked the numbers on Samsung's own tools.
If those Verge phones are accurate, those Verge photos are accurate, and I think I see no reason not to think so, these were the official replacements, at least in South Southwest.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
3 or 4 of them, at least, they've identified. And one of them, a Samsung person accidentally texted the owner of the phone saying, what do you want me to do? Try to suppress this? And it sounds like in Korea, there's charges of them trying to suppress it in the media as well. And that it's never the story. It's always it's never the crime. It's always the cover up. And that is potentially, I think, even more explosive than the actual phone incidents.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that text message, and it was just like, wow, this is going to make this so much worse, because if they're actually talking about this and they've managed to let on they're talking about it in these terms, that's it. You know, they're going to have to a complete product recall and redesign the phone, because, you know, people just aren't going to trust the brand after this.
The Note 7 in question here was owned by a fellow from Kentucky. It on Tuesday, it not only caught fire, but sent him to the hospital with smoke inhalation. And Samsung knew about this and didn't say anything about this. They asked him if they could take possession of the phone. He said no, though the company did pay to have it x-rayed. But according to The Verge, the damning evidence comes in the form of a text message that he received accidentally from a Samsung representative. Quote, just now got this. I can try and slow him down if we think it will matter, or we just let him do what he keeps threatening to do and see if he does it. So I think it's a smoking gun. They clearly knew about it and were But they knew what the damage would be. I mean, this is for the Note 7, right? That phone is now dead.
Yeah, I mean, people are capricious, and we've seen many examples of where, you know, like people like us will just say never again. Like, I've done that with companies that have installed rootkits or other forms of malware on their own machines and sold them to me. But other people go and buy the next version immediately thereafter and go on.
It's not fully rational, though, because really statistically, even if you had the original Note 7, it was 1 in 30,000 that you might get a burn.
But consumer behavior is never rational.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and who wants to take the chance? It's just a phone. I'm not going to take the chance. All
and again, it was a little girl was playing with one of them.
Say again?
And that, a little girl was one of the people playing with one of them, and that's something you never, ever want to have happen.
Right. And, you know, if people are asking me, and all I could say is, well, why take the chance? Get rid of your Note 7.
Yeah.
Yep.
Here's the bigger problem. Do you then say, should I get a Galaxy S7?
No, hang around.
Get a Note 5 if you really want. If you really want a stylus, get a Note 5. If you really want a Samsung, get a Galaxy S7. If you really want an Android phone, get a Pixel. If you really
and you
want,
should like, feel okay about that. You shouldn't worry.
No, I don't think so.
Because we've had phones and lithium-ion batteries for years, and even though some small number.
Well, typically when they're damaged, they've been hit or they've been dropped or something.
Battery gets punctured, but this is the same. The Teslas had this problem too with.
But I mean, René's got a point. You can't use lithium-ion batteries on a mass-market product without once or twice them going nuts. All it takes is a tiny sliver of metal within the actual battery itself breaking loose, shorting across, and then instant fire. It's an essentially, you know, it's a very safe technology. But when it goes boom, and you know, it can be quite dangerous in that regard.
Yeah, but the Note 7 is beyond the statistical norm. It's beyond the norm. I think that people need for safety. So you need to take it back.
Oh, by the way, Jeff Jarvis is about to join us as well.
Awesome.
So we went crazy when we said, oh, we lost Ben Thompson. We said, just call everybody, you know,
you need at least 4 or 5.
Actually, I'm thrilled. I think this is a lot of fun. We'll get Ben again on another time. He probably either forgot or, as has happened once before, his internet might've gone out and, then he's kind of out of luck.
So kudos to Jordan Golson for doing a heck of a job reporting for this on the Verge. He's been on it all weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Well, it's a big story. It's a big story for all consumers. I know when I get calls about something, and I got a lot of them on the radio show, that people are aware of it. And I think that it will have a long-term damaging effect on Samsung.
Yeah, at just the time when it doesn't need a bad reputation. Because I mean,
well, by the way, I have a Samsung clothes washer.
Right.
And apparently there's a problem there, too.
Yeah. Don't put it on the extra hot setting. You know?
And they were accused of, again, bad things will always happen. Like this could happen to any manufacturer there, but by the grace of God, it happens to anybody because it's this technology, but it's how you handle it that really matters and how you deal with consumers. And we've gone back to that Tylenol incident repeatedly where they could have just pulled those VAT numbers and tried, you know, play the odds, but they pulled everything because they knew their brand was more important. And there's concerns over how Samsung was trying to cover up evidence for the washing machines too. And that's the part that's going to hurt. I mean, Samsung needs to, as a company, get in front of this and do everything it can to make sure that their customers feel that they're protected and it's not Samsung protecting themselves, because that's the part that always hurts a company.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Samsung's certainly worst PR week. Yahoo, a very close second.
Oh, we're going to get to that in a moment. Yeah. Let me introduce Jeff Jarvis, though. He's just joining us. Professor of Journalism at the City University of New York.
Sorry, you got me on pizza night.
That looks like wine, Jeff. I hate to tell you, that ain't pizza.
The pizza's done. The wine is still there. You also have to live with my Hillary swag day.
I knew you'd be wearing your hoodie because you were complaining that you bought it and hadn't in August and hadn't
Hillary stickers. And I'm back from Bethlehem, PA, having registered voters today. So
fantastic. I think you probably will want us. I don't know, maybe not to be done by the time the debate starts.
Well, it's 9 o'clock. You bloody well better be done by then.
Oh, you don't know how long Twit goes, do you?
I do, but that's 2.5 hours from now.
Well,
all right, I'll wave goodbye then. I got to be on Twitter for that event. Absolutely. On Samsung, I actually feel sympathy for Samsung because they finally got their act together. They finally put out good products. They finally figured it out. They finally stopped with all the worst of the junkware. They finally did it all. And then, you know, the sex tape came out.
Yeah, it is Samsung's sex tape, isn't it?
Yeah. I would have sympathy for them if they behaved differently. If the reaction was different. It's hard to have sympathy given reports in both the U.S. and Korea that they're not doing the right thing.
The real question, I mean, it's clear that nobody's going to buy a Note 7 ever again. The real question.
They've got to just
Is I think they will.
Like, are they out of the phone business, though? I mean, that's the real question.
Ooh, that'd be a shame.
No.
They're too big worldwide.
Yeah. You know, and I know you've already talked about this. The Google event was this week. I'm rapidly coming to the point where I think instead of having five phones, four Android phones and one iPhone, I will be down to two phones, a Google phone and an Apple phone, and that will be that. And I'm wondering if that isn't the future going forward. Certainly Google, with its announcement of the Pixel, its price point, and the fact that the Pixel has features no other Android device has, kind of sounds to me like Google's going after the other handset manufacturers.
Okay, but Leo, here's my question about the Pixel. And as usual, I'm neurotic, so I need you to talk me through this, because I've ordered it, and I might cancel it. I don't know. I'm going to be neurotic. I'm from New York. I'm allowed to be. The whole notion that AI is available only on this phone makes no sense to me, because the AI occurs up in the cloud, up in the big, big, big machine somewhere off in Google land.
Well, and it's the same. Apparently, AI is in Allo. So if you put the Allo Messenger on your Apple phone or your
This week. I tried to ask.
Yeah, we were Alloing back and forth. I was in Paris, and we were Alloing.
So I tried to also use Allo with Google Assistant this week. And it doesn't work so well. So I understand I want to have Allo available at a crack with the phone. But what I'm saying is I think that Google just pulled a marketing trick and put Assistant into the new phone because it's a marketing thing. It's not because there's any hardware reason that it should be there or not elsewhere, right?
There maybe is an argument that they don't want to go wide right away, that they want to slowly, and this happens, roll it out.
You see, this is why I'm kind of skeptical about the whole sort of Google is going after Samsung with this, because they don't have the infrastructure in place to do the kind of long-term large infrastructure large sales and have the infrastructure
good
to back
point.
That
That's
out.
A bigger problem. Yeah.
So
really good point.
They're not going to be going up against Samsung directly.
Although Verizon is going to be selling the Pixel. They're going to sell it in their stores.
Yeah. I mean, Verizon's a very small player outside of the U.S. Yeah. I mean, it's a pure U.S. sell. Everyone else, it's all down to SIM cards. And Verizon is a historical or technological anomaly. It really has no further place in the tech sphere. But if Google are actually serious about taking on Samsung, there's a whole bunch of other stuff they need rather than just, we've got this shiny new phone. And Samsung's AI buy, Viv.
The folks who did Siri, sold it to Apple, have created a new AI, Viv.ai, and just sold to Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has to. Microsoft's got Cortana. Google's got Assistant. Apple's got Siri. You're going to be a player, Amazon's got Echo. And if you're going to be a player, you better have
If you want to be a platform, you have to have a virtual assistant. Samsung so far has been an Android licensee, but they've been flirting with being their own platform for a long time, with their own store, with their own variant
and
operating
Tizen.
Systems.
With Tizen.
Yeah, Tizen. Bada before Tizen.
What did you think of that notion of going from mobile first to AI first? Who was that?
I like that. Let's take a break, because I want to be timely in our commercials so we can get you out in time for the debate. But I also want to spend some time on this Google announcement, because there was a lot to unpick.
An awful lot there.
Great panel today. Jeff Jarvis just joining us.
I am honored as ever to be here.
Oh, we love having you on from This Week in Google. And I missed you over the last couple of weeks.
I missed you too, Leo.
But I followed along your hoodie drama. And and I'm glad to see you and talk to you. Look at that. Why would a campaign for a president sell a hoodie?
I'll sell anything to get the brand out.
A hoodie.
This does have a rather a monk look, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hillary.
Hoodie of solidarity.
There we go.
Also with us from the register.co.uk. Oh, it's hoodie time. Where's
solidarity.
Your hoodie? Solidarity.
I'm sorry, mate. I wore a shirt at the time.
Two monks and a Brit walk into a room.
Well, meanwhile, from Brexit land.
Yeah, from Brexit.
Yeah, okay. Rub it in.
We got plenty to rub in here.
We got Brexit. I mean, you got everything.
You've got another 31 days to call us stupid about that vote. Ooh. And then when President Trump comes in, boots on the other foot, Maisie.
Ooh, mighty.
Ooh. And then also, of course, from Montreal. It's the international episode.
There's the only guy who can smugly look at the rest of us thinking, we got to know.
Only for the moment. We've had our dark days, too.
By the way, I've been getting calls ever since the pre-show from Danish listeners. It was Belgium that didn't have a constitutional crisis, a parliamentary crisis.
It was for 300 some days. I think they had
no government. President, but now they do.
And the country ran perfectly well.
And Italy, Denmark has been
Italy
fine.
And Israel almost every year, right?
There's a message there. You
know? I was in Belgium. It was running well. The chocolate and the beer was fabulous.
Waffles, chocolate, beer. I mean, what else do you really need government waffles. For?
Oh, man.
Did you have any herring, Leo?
No, I avoided the herring like the
plague. Oh, you missed out.
You wasted it. You wasted it.
I did not.
He was
not.
In Stockholm. He had no herring.
I was only briefly in Stockholm. I didn't get to Storehouse.
Long enough.
I could have had herring, but no, I chose otherwise.
As long as you didn't have that fermented shark stuff, which just the smell of it is, you know, they don't even allow that on aircraft in Sweden anymore because it's just, if a tin breaks, they've got to steam clean the entire aircraft.
It's like the Samsung 7.
Please turn off. Yeah,
it's the Samsung 7 of herring.
turn off your fermented shark.
I was on the plane, Leo, and they made that announcement. And someone behind me said, "Oh, what's going wrong?" And then this guy said, "Oh, it'll burn down your house." And then everyone in the cabin started freaking out. And they took like 5 minutes to try to calm everybody down before takeoff.
What's still unclear, though, is these phones are clearly burning even if they're not charging. It's not clear that they're not burning if they're not on. I think that if it's burning when it's just sitting in your pocket, it doesn't matter if it's on or off, right?
That's going to kill somebody in a house or a car or something.
Good. Yeah. It's really it's awesome. Not good.
Yeah. And also, as a pilot, I know for a number of pilots, their biggest fear isn't crashing per fire. Se. It's a fire on a cross-Atlantic or cross-Pacific flight. Because if that happens, you've just got to get the plane down as fast as possible. And there has never been a recorded instance of an aircraft landing in the sea and coming out of it in one piece.
No.
Well, thanks for jollying up this episode.
Hey, listen, you're never going home, are you?
I used to recover aviation IT, and I swear I could tell you horror
really?
Stories. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. We'll have to get into that. But first, a word from Carbonite, our sponsor this hour. Carbonite Online Backup protects your files on your servers, on your system. It's automatic cloud backup, and it is a boon for anybody in business. Your data in business is your business, you know, your customer list, your suppliers, your accounts receivable. And so a good backup is vital. How many times have we seen now ransomware bite hospitals, police departments, businesses, and it is devastating. What was that hospital in L.A. that was couldn't handle patients for like 3 weeks? If they'd had Carbonite, it would have been over in 3 minutes. Carbonite Online Backup does versioning. That means if you're running Windows, you turn on versioning. Even if you get bit by ransomware, even if you get your encrypted files backed up, you could still go back to the pre-encrypted version. You're never at risk. A good backup is the best solution for all kinds of horrific occurrences, from hurricanes to ransomware. Few things are as bad for business as downtime, so don't take the risk. Carbonite's backed up 500 billion files and counting. More than 1.5 million homes and small businesses use Carbonite. And right now it's free to try. No credit card needed. Just go to carbonite.com. But do use the offer code TWIT, because if you do decide to buy, you'll get 2 months free with your purchase for home, for office, for Mac, or for PC. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right. With Carbonite. This week in tech, I'm so glad to be back. After about 10 days away, I started holding little roundtable panel discussions. In the state
I was going to say, poor Lisa, because you probably started hosting just randomly during the trip.
Lisa! Hey, Sven, you want to come over and talk about Samsung?
Oh, my God.
Leo, we're at dinner. Stop interviewing them.
It's really an addiction, the tech news. And when you're at sea, you know, it's hard to get in the internet.
What news while you were gone made you most say, "Oh, I wish I could talk"? Was there anything?
That's interesting. That's a good question.
Elon Musk.
What happened with Elon Musk?
Were you here when he detailed his Martian excursion plans?
No. I was at sea. I missed that. He's taking us to Mars now? Is that the deal?
And beyond.
He's evacuating a world he does not believe is real. This is correct.
Oh, this whole thing about that we're in a game, the simulation. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think it's easier to hack it at this point. Don't make a rocket. Just hack the code.
Most of the space experts I know say it is much harder to live on Mars than you think. A lot harder to live on Mars than on Earth, even in the worst scenario of climate change.
But Winnipeg, it is harder to live on Mars than in Winnipeg.
It's harder to live on Mars than Winnipeg. That tells you something.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's not entirely the point, because I think one of the things he's worried about is that we are one giant space rock away from extinction at the moment.
Well, that's
and if
true.
You can get a self-sustaining colony on Mars...
What does he care if it's a simulation?
Yeah, if it's a bounce shot, all, we're still done.
So I did see the rumor.
Hey, he's going for bonus points.
I did see the rumor, and I like this, that Elon and others who believe like he does that we are living in a simulation have secretly funded, and this scares the hell out of me, research to break through the Matrix. What would you research?
I feel like I'm reading a Warren Ellis story, you know, where he like goes into a fictional universe and brings somebody back or just hacks the bleed.
Are they trying to find the blue pill? What are they trying to do?
Yeah, I don't know. But hang on. Surely if you break out of the game, they just press reset and we're back to sort of, you know.
Puts in another quarter, hits the button. Wham, wham.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Game over.
We're back to Romeo with Savannah again.
Say again?
Was he born outside the U.S.?
He's born in South Africa. Yeah.
He's a South African Canadian.
Just like this guy. Well,
yeah.
But he came here at a young age. Elon and his brother, I think, who spent a lot of time in a hot tub discussing this, apparently.
A hot tub dimension machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he spent a lot of time in a hot tub with maybe some of California's
substances. Well, the line between genius and madman is very, very thin, and it could go either way. Like, he could be proven totally right eventually.
I think it's similar to the question of does God exist? I don't know if there's any way to prove it.
This twit's going to go on for 5 hours now. Oh, no.
It's John Carmack. We've discovered God, and it's John Carmack.
God is John Carmack. That's right. So let's talk about the Google event on Tuesday, October 4th. This was the thing that really bugged me because I was in the air. I get on the plane and say, is there Wi-Fi? And he said, no, sir, I'm sorry.
Good grief. Who are you flying?
British Airways.
They
won't let you stream anyway. Like, will they let you? Because I know on Air Canada Wi-Fi, you can't stream video regardless of
I'm at
Wi-Fi.
Sea at 4 the newest, in the right? morning. I'm at sea listening to the debate. It was 4 a.m. We were in Russia. But I'm listening. Actually, not even. Wow.
Just Putin hacking your computer and putting it on there.
But I was able to different version of the bit to listen to the audio, and it actually was kind of fun. Remember they always said in the 1960 Nixon Kennedy debate, the people who watched it had a different opinion. Mm. They thought that Kennedy won, and the people who listened thought that Nixon won because they couldn't see his sweaty upper lip. In the case of this last debate, I think the people on audio had a worse impression because the sniffing was much louder.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God.
I barely noticed
what is going
it.
I'm trying to imagine what's going on.
Excuse me while I have a presidential line. And
it was just weird. Anyway, not to get political.
Then somebody at the New York Times watched with no sound on. They did the opposite.
Yeah. It was just as bad either way, I think.
Yeah. Tonight's going to be
unbelievable. I can't tell Alec Baldwin from the real thing anymore, and I think that tells you.
That was wild. The reason I bring that up, there is a tech angle to that, is T-Mobile versus Google Fi overseas. You loved Google Fi in Germany, I think it was, right?
Yes, it works pretty well. Not for you?
It worked okay, but I was really amazed, and I don't know if this is a short-term thing. T-Mobile over the summer said higher speeds, then they extended it. But in most cases, my iPhone 7 running T-Mobile outpaced my 6P running Google Fi.
Really?
Yeah. I would go back and forth.
I've used T-Mobile in Europe, and I find it's
good.
Bonza. It's great.
It was good in every country. And as soon as we got close to the coast, even though we were sailing the Baltic, we were near land enough that I wasn't without internet a lot of that time.
Jason got worried during the Google announcement that it was Verizon only. But I bought the unlocked, so it should be no problem.
The good news, and you've already seen, I'm sure, the Android Police story that said, whatever you do, don't buy it from Verizon.
No, because you're not going to get the updates.
They've already said.
Oh, no.
They may not update as fast.
Yeah.
But you get media partnerships, Leo. You get media partnerships with Verizon.
Oh, thank you, Verizon. And you know Verizon, Google apparently doesn't have the cloud. Apple does. You know Verizon will put the Verizon crapware on there.
Yeah.
Taylor's. Swift on security had a
Ars Technica. Thank you. And that was at Ron Amadio? Yeah, Ron Amadio. Sorry, Ron, I owe you. He says, if you like updates, don't buy it from Verizon.
No, I mean, that's just... I mean, when I first came here, I used Verizon. I've been shafted by them enough. I like a kiss rather than that with a credit card. But no, I'd never go for Verizon because, as I say, the whole point about getting a Pixel is that you get the software earlier. You get the security updates earlier. Right. If you're relying on Verizon to push that through, then... Don't bother. Seriously, don't bother.
It was a little frustrating.
Excuse me. Breaking news.
Breaking news?
Breaking news. Mark Zuckerberg is doing Facebook Live barbecuing in his backyard right now.
Can we pull that up, ladies and gentlemen? We're going to pause this version of Twit to watch. Is he actually going to show himself killing, butchering?
Is he deep frying a turkey?
By the way, thank you for joining us the day before Canadian Thanksgiving.
Oh, of course.
And wish a happy Thanksgiving to all our friends in Canada.
Yeah, we have it early because of the frost, like the harvest. We have to get all the stuff done first.
Ian asked an interesting question before the show began. What exactly are you thankful for?
So, I mean, it's the same thing you're thankful for in America. Oh. It's the harvest festival. It's just the harvest comes earlier.
In America, we're thankful. The first Thanksgiving, wasn't it in Plymouth? Because Squanto and the Indians kept the pilgrims from starving to death.
Yeah.
By bringing squash.
Yeah. And in exchange, you killed them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gave them small.
No, I'm sure it's similar here. We just probably made up some variant of that folk story. and then just had our regular harvest festival anyway.
It's a harvest festival.
Yes.
I'm
just surprised we don't have Easter a month late because you have to wait for it to defrost. I mean, there's no harmony here.
It's the pumpkin spice time has come.
Yeah.
It is never pumpkin spice time. I've tried that once, and it is the food of the devil and should be thrown away instantly.
You can't just try pumpkin spice.
Yeah.
You have to try it in something.
I've been mugged once, and I never want to try that again. And it was pumpkin spice is like mugging for the tongue, you know. It's just, ugh.
Did you order, Leo? Did you order a Pixel? Which one?
I did. So we got off the plane, and it was already sold out. I wanted it, you know, October 20th.
Which one?
All of them.
The blue. All of them?
I got my order in.
If you wanted to get it
mine in quickly.
Fastest, you had to do it right away. It's very similar to an Apple debut, but I'm going to get it in early November. But I couldn't get the blue, but I didn't want the blue. That was only 32 gigabytes.
32.
Yeah, that's dumb.
On the Canadian store, there was no blue. I felt completely shafted.
You don't want? What do you want? A blue phone?
I would have liked a nice Canadian red phone. They didn't have that either.
I had to have 128 gigs. I had to, so I ordered 128, but I couldn't get the XL in that size.
Really?
So I had to get the littler one. This is going to be a good experiment. First of all, I haven't had a 5-inch phone since BlackBerry.
Right.
So that's going to, well, no.
You're not going to like it. You're going to hate it.
And I'm curious what the battery life will be.
It's probably better than a D-Tech. I mean, let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Well, it'll charge to 7 hours in 15 minutes.
I was blown away by that.
That's the last thing I want right now, though.
I know. Oh, good news.
I'm going to put it on a 5-volt charger and just wait.
See if it gets hot.
You see, I'm kind of skeptical about the fast charge thing because when I was testing out the 5X and the 6P, yeah, you could get 50% within 20 minutes, 25 minutes or so. But that last 15%, you had to leave the damn thing plugged in for another half an hour. Now,
an hour and a half sharp up on the other side. 2 hours.
Don't let me interrupt, but this just in from Mark Zuckerberg. No.
Backyard.
Yeah, no, this is my weekend thing. I love this. I just go. I'm doing my triathlon and running training, and then
he's got a big green egg. I love the big green egg.
My wife and I love doing.
Is he going to do a turducken?
Wow.
How many people are watching right now on Twit?
fewer than are watching Mark. 73,700 people are watching Mark Zuckerberg wax on about his barbecue style.
Can we just pause culture right now?
Hopefully soon. I had a really good time. Lagos was pretty amazing. The entrepreneurial energy.
Yeah,
there,
right when he was in Lagos, the really Elon Musk's rocket blew up.
Yeah, that was kind of embarrassing.
Plans for wiring
Musk sent out rather.
Is his big green egg? Does he have the microphone and camera covered on that too? I can't tell.
It looks like he does have. It looks like a wire coming out of it. He must have some sort of
wireless. That's a social graph. News here.
I'm sorry. This guy's a billionaire. And I've got one of those seats beside me.
This is the one you get at Costco, the folding camp chair.
I
think this is huge news. We just discovered something.
What's that?
It's not a gray T-shirt.
It's purple.
Oh, it's purple. It must be the weekend.
This
you know,
is,
he's letting
this
his
is
hair
the
down.
Weekend mufti.
So what I'm curious about is if it's just Mark sitting in his yard, he's got a laptop and a camera, or if there's 25 technicians.
Almost certainly that. Yeah, almost certainly.
Including Colleen Kelly, who works for Facebook doing streaming video. Somehow I feel like it's the latter.
Yeah. Is there a halo rig all around him right now?
Well, he's got thousands of people watching him.
Well, I was at the presentation that he gave the other week about how he and his wife were going to cure the world of all known diseases, and it was... I mean, I admire his pluck, but for goodness sake, get a sense of hubris in this, and it just...
Yeah, yeah.
Well, philosophical question here. Mm-hmm. Does intense fame and unimaginable wealth make you crazy, or do you have to be crazy to get...
Don't you wish you knew, Leo?
Most crazy, ergo proper crazy? Is that the question?
Yeah, I think...
Yes. Yeah, a little West Wing here, but yes.
I think for the majority of... Certainly people I've met in the tech sphere, they are very smart, very committed people who happen to become incredibly wealthy, with a few exceptions. There are complete psychos who got very, very, very wealthy very quickly, and not mentioning anyone, Oracle. And there
but
they
I'm
have...
I'm just thinking about Mark and Elon particularly.
Yeah.
Or Sergey and Larry with their party bus.
Sergey and Larry, same thing.
Yeah, they had the 747.
Were they like that before, and then maybe this somehow facilitated their ability?
I had $20 billion in my 20s. I think I would be dead now. I would just give me... I can fly this plane. Yeah. I can dive under this ocean. I would just do it. I remember listening to an interview with one of the Bronfman children, and he said that he's devoted his life to rebuilding buildings with eco-friendliness because he knew if he didn't have a defined purpose, that money would drive him, would just make him lose all context.
Very good. He'd end up like Dad.
So there's no limits. Before they did their announcement for the health thing, there was a picture of Mark and his wife sitting on a couch, and there was a whiteboard behind them. And I said in the comments... I just thought for a second, do you have a whiteboard in your house? But I realized it's your office. And he said, well, but we do have a whiteboard in our
house. Of course they do.
Where they can reinvent the world.
You know, I'd be tempted, actually, to get that whiteboard paint and just paint all the walls with it.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
This has become a very discursive twit, and it's because I'm back, and I'm just so thrilled to be back with my friends talking, and there's all this stuff I want to talk
about. And so much happened.
Yep.
Pixel phone. All right. Okay. So here was the big one for me. When I got down and I started watching the coverage and then watching our coverage with Jason, but also the videos and reading the stories. Sticker shock-a-rama.
Yeah.
What? This is not the Nexus.
Yeah.
They're supposed to let me pay with my data, Leo. That was our deal. Like, I give Apple money for shiny objects, and I give Google data for shiny objects.
The price in Canada and Australia sounds really...
It's over $1,000 if you go to us.
It was close to $1,300 for my Pixel XL with the protection plan.
Yeah, that makes Apple prices look reasonable.
Very few things make Apple prices look reasonable, but I do take your point. They are obviously going for the premium market, and they figure they can do it. You know, people will buy on the Google brand. Well, people are willing to pay silly money on the Apple brand because it's got proven design chops and technical chops as well, and sex appeal. No one has ever said, ooh, that's a Google phone. That's sexy. You know, it just doesn't work that way.
As much as I like the Nexuses, they've never had the fit and finish of a single iPhone, and especially the latter-day iPhones like the 7. These things are,
they were meant to be developer phones. Like, they were ludicrously low priced. Right. Some of them.
I love the phone. Yeah. But all right. So
what
so,
is that
yeah,
you're holding up? Wait a minute. Is that what
this is
that?
6B.
That's a 6B. But if you
here's the question.
Jeff, if you look at an iPhone 7, here's the jet black iPhone 7.
I know.
This should be in the museum of modern art. I mean, everything.
It's hand candy.
It feels like it was like some craftsman.
Okay, but here's the issue with the Nexus, with the Pixel. I have to believe that there is no hardware tied to the AI thing. It's a temporary thing. You get some benefit to use it directly. You can still use Allo. Not a big deal. Number two, the camera. Okay, it's a better camera, but that's it.
DxO Mark says it's the best camera.
Fine.
See, they're
do you trust them, Renee? I mean,
no. So, the thing, No, I don't. Well, for a couple of reasons. And I think Matthew Panzerino explained this really, really well the other day. It's, well, one is that they make products. So it's always hard to have a scale right. when you're selling that big ad at the bottom for your camera. But the other thing is that the scores, they give them the scores, and then the scores are generational, but they don't really change. So there's a bunch of cameras that came out 2 years ago that are obviously worse, but still score high because the scale is never adjusted.
Because they were high for that time.
Yeah, for that time. And it's unclear what the score, like, I believe the Pixel has an outstanding camera. I think there's a whole bunch of smarts in it. But what do those two numbers mean? Like, what is the differential there? I think they don't do a great job in explaining it, which is why, like, I'll wait for the Anantech review or some of the other reviews like that to tell me what's going on.
Well, and also there's more than optics involved. Software that Apple, the stuff Apple does in software to those images is pretty remarkable. I have to say, I came back. I took an iPhone 7 on the trip, specifically the 7 Plus, to take a lot of pictures. And I also took a very high-end Leica camera. And I have to say, many of the images are more pleasing from the iPhone.
Yeah.
The Leica's
design.
They
did a good job with the noise. Like on the portrait mode, they really tuned the noise. Like, they do a disc blur effect, and they tuned the noise to look like old-style film. So even when you're in low light, it doesn't look like the best digital photo in the world, but it's got this incredible humanistic feeling that feels like in the old days when you took a film photo and it wasn't quite the right light or speed, but you just love the memory it gave you. And they've been very good at tapping into the emotional resonance of the
photo. We shouldn't credit this score of 89, the highest score DxO Mark's ever given out. But at least say it's a decent camera.
Okay, so why should I buy this? Yeah. For this huge price, I don't see what is the real, let's be really honest.
No OIS is the
huge advantage over the 6P.
Assistant.
Yeah, tight Google integration.
But again, that is a marketing ploy, I think.
Hmm. Well, I would like to know what's the difference between OK Google and the new Google Assistant. What is the difference?
And well, not only that, Leon, but trying to say something else. They're arguing this is the only phone with Assistant because why? Because they chose to make it that, not because there is any hardware connection that makes it only possible.
Can't
they turn on a switch tomorrow and make it available?
They would
for
have to
else?
Code it though. Like I think it's a tight into like it, they have limited resources and they were able to do the tight integration on this phone first, and then maybe they'll go and backport it to other phones. But it's
and by the way, the Google Home, which they also announced an Echo competitor.
Yeah,
And that will also.
But what's the tight? Rene, what's that tight integration mean? It's software only.
Jeff, I agree. I think you could.
Yeah.
You might make the case that Google didn't want to roll it out into phone Android
wide.
There's
an extra chip.
They can pull it into the OS. They can build it right into the OS the way Siri is built into the OS, and with the existing phones, they'd have to go back and re-add it to the. Like, I think it's imminently possible. It just their timelines are different.
I've got a Google phone. I've got a 6P. For them to add back in the AI capability to this, I've not heard any reason why that's
not quickly
doable.
Exactly. I have to think this is the only differentiator that they could offer on this phone.
So
right?
Why spend this fortune, very expensive phone? Hmm. I get tempted. This is my neuroses. I do this every time on these shows. So I've ordered it immediately because I'm neurotic that way. Hmm. And then I turn around and say, am I wasting nearly $1,000? Cancel this sucker?
My thing is also, if I don't want an iPhone, like I don't want an iPhone. Like I loved getting this phone because no one in the world
that's
would mistake
the Windows
this
for an
iPhone.
Oh my goodness,
you got a Windows phone? How retro!
But it looks that's. Well, I have one of each. I have Palm 3s. I have Nexuses. I try to get one of each platform, but I like that they're all different. So I tend to gravitate towards the more extremes.
Are you
of each
sad
platform.
That BlackBerry has finally thrown in the towel and says we're not going to make hardware anymore?
I'm sad as a Canadian because like we lost Nortel and we lost 3GFX. Yeah. We've lost all these. Very few companies had their own operating systems, and Canada had two. They had both BBOS and they had QNX. And BlackBerry famously bought QNX, and now all the big brains from QNX work for Apple. And that's great, but it doesn't really help Canada. So as a Canadian, I think it's an indescribable loss to our technology sector.
Yeah.
Yeah, end of an era, certainly.
End
but
of
it
an
had
era.
To happen. You know, it really had to happen. They missed the market 10 years ago and they never got it back.
It's really a morality tale when you look at both Microsoft and BlackBerry. Both underestimated in 2007 what the iPhone was going to do to the phone business, the cell phone business. Both of them poo-pooed it and waited, and not waited long. Microsoft got its first new Windows phone platform 3 years later. It was still just enough too late that developers ignored it. BlackBerry was even later, and the first few things they did, like the BlackBerry Storm, were so horrible.
Oh, the tablets
which they internally codenamed the Well, the tablet, they didn't build phones for a year so they could get that tablet out. I mean, the whole thing. Even Microsoft, if they had, they didn't realize the consumer phone, if they'd made an Xbox phone that ran Halo and put it on every store shelf, maybe they'd have a shot with the consumer market. But their branding, everything, just screamed, please do not buy me.
But you see, at least BlackBerry did something. You know, everyone talks about Apple invented the smartphone. Rubbish. Apple,
no, BlackBerry's
BlackBerry made smart. The smartphone yeah. absolutely yeah. essential. Yeah. Apple just made it look pretty. But Microsoft has been trying to do a mobile operating system back since Win, so it was a Windows CE. And it just hasn't worked. All the way along the line, they're too locked into their particular mindset.
Maybe that's it.
So, I mean, I mourn the loss of BlackBerry, but, you know, at least they did something with the market.
BlackBerry grew up from a pager where Apple just wanted to put right. a computer. Like, we have Nix boxes in our pockets now. Everybody would probably thought Microsoft would be everywhere now, and we're all walking around whether using Android or iPhone, and you have Unix in your pocket, and it's a very different era.
Has the worm turned or what?
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk. So, Pixel, it'll be out. It starts shipping October 20th. If you ordered it today, you wouldn't get it till the following month. Very expensive. Doesn't seem to have a lot of differentiating features. Perhaps the only differentiating feature.
I want to see the camera, though, Leo.
I want to see
no
the camera.
There's no OIS, but they say that it does a really good job in software about stabilizing the video.
Well, you
video,
saw the video stabilization looked remarkable.
But how much cropped was that? Like, usually when you do electronic stabilization, you crop it a lot. Yeah. So I want to see what that result's like. And also, again, like what Jeff said, what are you getting for those?
Wait a minute, though. Wait a minute, though. I'm thinking back to the event. When they talked about the video stabilization, they said a gyroscope measures the motion of the phone 200 times a second. There is hardware stabilization for video in there. There's just not OIS.
The lens is not moving. Yeah, right. So the lens is not moving. It's just the gyroscope is adjusting it. But I don't know. When the lens is moving, you still get the full frame of that lens. I don't know what happens when the gyroscope is internally adjusting for
it. And they did not mention whether that does anything for stills, if they're going to use the same technology or no technology at all.
It didn't sound like it, yeah.
We just have to wait and see. We also have to wait and see about the unlimited thing, because somebody called the radio show and said, you know, I talked to Google. The deal was, the way they publicized it, is if you're using a Pixel phone, you have unlimited original quality storage.
But...
It's
big but on that.
Of the JPEGs.
Oh. Yeah. If you're sticking to their standard 16 megapixel, I think it's a 16 megapixel resolution, then fine, you get unlimited storage. If you have your phone setting higher and you want to store those raw images, then it goes against your 15 terabyte storage limit. So there is a kicker to that one.
So that's good. Thank you for clarifying, because I thought, well, that's not the impression I got, but in fact, it's JPEGs only.
Think of it like Microsoft Unlimited Storage. Yeah, they can talk about it all they like, but the reality of the situation is slightly different.
So another differentiator gone by the wayside. I'm not sure that this Pixel phone is going to do very well.
I can see another unboxing, reboxing coming up in my future.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm hopefully going to be getting the review kit on the 18th, fingers crossed.
Oh, good.
The one thing that does worry me about the camera, and this is something I've just done a year's roundup of living with the 5X, and the oleophobic coating on the 5X degenerated within about 6 months.
That's the thing that makes it easy to wipe off fingerprints.
Yeah, but that also went for the lens as well. So I was getting some fairly smeary photos unless I took great care of the lens. So, hopefully it's going to be good, but we'll let you know.
Case or no on the jet black iPhone?
I don't have cases on mine because I like the looks a lot. And so far,
matte. That's matte.
I have both. I have the jet black on the shelf over there. The 7 in the jet black and the 7 Plus in the matte black. I wanted to see both new colors.
What do you think, case or no case?
Always get a case for your smartphone. Think of it. Think how much that cost and think how much that cost.
I know, but the one
it's
they
like
have
wearing a condom. You just do it. You know?
The Millennium Falcon had no case, Leo. And look at how beautiful
it is. Didn't it look beautiful?
Yeah. It did.
Yeah. Warren.
I mean, she called
the case they have for the Pixel is ugly. It's a junky piece of clear plastic, or it's some colored junky thing. Look at the cases. They're awful.
Yeah.
I like my 6P case. It has this kind of
the 6P cases.
Carpet like the Google.
You know what,
VR,
Jeff? But, you know. Don't even unbox. Just throw it away. Send it away. You don't want it. You don't need that Pixel phone. Get rid of it.
We agree, though, Leo, that the age of hating on bezels is over, because there was such hate that, you know, Apple still had bezels, and now Google's saying, yeah, bezels are cool.
They have a huge
it's like
bezel.
The bottom's coming back.
You know who doesn't have bezels? Samsung.
Yep.
And their phones explode. So
One.
The bezels man. Equal exploding phones.
Okay.
The bezel buffer.
Post hoc propter hoc. Or something. What about, okay, so somebody, some wagon, I wish I could find this headline, said, Google announces copies of iPhone, Amazon, Echo, Roku, Gear VR, and Eero.
That's so silly because, famously, there were music players before the iPod. They were phones before the iPhone. They were tablets before the iPad. So to me, there's this thing called copy forward. When you say great artists steal, it doesn't mean you do a bit by bit, pixel by pixel, atom by atom copy, but you take what's come before, the best of it, and you carry that forward because humans shouldn't have to learn different ways of using all these things. There are very good ways of using it, and you build on that and you take it forward. Now, you can argue that the industrial design of the Pixel or the utility of the Google Home isn't a significant enough drive forward, but for some people, just being able to log into their Google account instead of an iCloud account or an Amazon account is exactly the functionality they want in that device. So I think we have to judge them not on their me too-edness, but on their on the actual execution of the devices.
What I do see, and I think is interesting, is that Google might be taking a page from Apple. Apple's really built their business on a closed ecosystem where everything interacts with everything else, and it strongly incents the consumer to buy all Apple. Your watch can wake up your computer, can copy and paste from your computer to your phone. It all works together seamlessly in theory. Google has in the past kind of been more open, like we're going to work with everybody. Mm-hmm. Allo is both iOS and Android, that kind of thing. But now with this new range of products, and incidentally, no mention at all of Chromebooks or Android Wear.
Yeah, which really or got Andromeda. Me pissed off.
Yeah, or this dual operating system code name.
Yeah, Android Wear got pushed back, I think, till next year.
Nevertheless, it looks like Google's, forget copying all those devices, is copying the idea of a closed ecosystem. That if you have a Google phone, you're going to want the Google Home because it's the same assistant. It knows the same things about you, that kind of thing.
They already have that up to a point. I mean, I've been trying to switch my wife onto Android from iOS, and it's just not happening because, you know, she doesn't use Gmail. She uses an alternative webmail provider. So she's then got to set that up. So
that's a good point.
So
if you have a Gmail account, Android makes a lot more sense.
Makes a huge amount much more sense. But there is a price with that in that it's kind of like Apple Microsoft. Microsoft went commodity. Apple went total lock-in.
They flip-flopped.
And it works really well, you know, if you've got all the bits working in sequence.
Right.
If Google hasn't, then the entire thing falls apart and you just become an expensive tie-in. So,
but watch,
I think it's also like if you're not, if you're,
how does it work with the Google Apps, Jeff?
I am fearing that greatly.
You know what? I'm really worried about Google Home works with only one Google account currently. So,
well, so there's and, I mean, a lot of watch, people won't be an Apps account. You know, well, okay, so here's a lot of question, Leo.
Yeah.
Have I been? Should I just? Here's the question.
Yeah, send it back. Cancel it.
By the way, no. My other question. So now we have Delete Google it. Apps now called, what is it, G-Spot?
Yes, G-Suite.
Well, because
my favorite high school rap G-Spot band. From now on. It's impossible to find.
G-Suite.
I'm waiting for the ads to say, Google, grab it by the G-Spot.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah, no.
I'm sorry.
Too soon, Leo.
No, the thing that's interesting, there's a couple things that interest me here. When you're more pessimistic about this, the companies tend to control what makes them money and try to fragment what makes their competitors money. So companies are only as open as what they want to disrupt.
The voice of wisdom there. You're right.
Yeah, so when companies become more successful, like Google needs to be open when they're starting off because they need to be on every device because their business requires scale. As you start owning the customer experience, then it makes sense to be more integrated because you can take those loyal customers and reward them with a greater value that comes from, you know, you want them to think buying the next thing, like you said, is greater and greater value. The interesting thing with the Home product is one of my understandings is like, you know, Apple hasn't made one. They've been experimenting with it for years because Siri is a personal assistant and not a multi-personal assistant. And if you're at home, Leo, and you go read me my text messages, how does Siri know whether it's yours or Lisa's or your kids? And that to Apple is a huge privacy problem. Where's my calendar appointment? Which account gets that calendar appointment? And they don't ever want to leak data from, or you're at work and you send say something to your assistant and your secretary is listening to your information or your partner is listening to it. So until you solve the multi personal assistant problem, they don't want to put hardware in the field.
Amazon Echo, of course, Amazon doesn't have anywhere near the kind of data about me that Google and Apple do, but the Amazon Echo does allow me to switch between Amazon accounts.
Yeah.
And the only reason I use that at all is for Audible, because I have an Audible account, Lisa has an Audible account, and I'll have it read, and I could say, Google, read to me and or I'm sorry, Amazon Read to me, and it will read to me from my account, or I could say Amazon Switch accounts, and then it'll read to me, and it'll read to me, or read to Lisa's account.
Here's my question about G-Spot. Should I'm just going to call it that now. I'm sorry. I'm gonna call it. Should I just abandon apps and go ahead and port my email into a regular Gmail account and give up? There's no reason to have apps. Unless you're a company, just don't bother.
I still use it. I mean, we still use it. But it always feels like Gmail gets everything before, you know, apps does.
Not just before. Some things don't happen. It's always awful.
Of course, we use Google Apps at Twit. We have a big corporate account. Everybody has the twit.tv. If you are at twit.tv, that's actually a Google Apps.
Yeah, we use a Google Apps for our
and I refuse to do it. I have a twit.tv address. I don't use it. I use my Gmail address. I use Gmail. I rarely use the company account because I want all the features of Google, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I tend to keep work and private life very separate, so I keep my Gmail account private.
It's a little different for me. This is my private life.
Well, yeah, welcome, there is that.
Thank you for joining me in my boudoir. I think Google is going to stumble here with the Google Home. I think that this is going to be a very difficult ecosystem for them to penetrate. I don't think anybody wants multiple devices on their mantelpiece and multiple commands and different... I just think that's not going to work.
I've got to say, there's this 3-in-1 for the Wi-Fi setup they've got. How many routers do you need, for goodness sake?
We have a sponsor called Eero that does the same thing. This is essentially...
And I think Ubiquiti is famous for that, too.
Ubiquiti's done this for years. Yeah. Ubiquiti pioneered it. But it was very difficult for a normal user.
Even Sonos, to some extent, like they're a mesh network. People don't think about it that way, because it's not a router.
Yeah,
but just get a router. Get a router with three aerials.
You make your own
aerials and you point them in the right direction.
When you're in a mansion, when you live
in the penthouse, you need because it's spread Lovey. Out. This has actually become a huge problem, even in apartments, because of congestion. There's about a million, right? But also just distances. And so I do think that there are better ways. It's about time we revolutionized. In fact, I'm waiting for Apple to get off its duff. It's been sitting on the Airport Extreme for how many years now?
Several. But again, like this is the thing that you can, to an extent, experiment with software. When you start experimenting with Atoms, and I was about to say that about Google Home, Google is at its best when they put everything behind it. And if they say, we're going to do Google Home, we're going to own it, we'll put it on the market, and we'll iterate, and we'll iterate, and we'll iterate, and we'll make it great. Google's at their worst when they're like, here's this Wave thing. Maybe it won't exist 3 months from now. Right. And people are less tolerant with that with Atoms. Like the Nest stuff, I think, is a great example of how people feel, don't feel support the product.
Right.
That's really hard to do. So Apple's thing is like, is the Airport Express, should it just be a router? Should it be a mesh router? Should it be something that downloads all your iCloud information, all your updates, you know, to your local server so you don't have to wait for them anymore? Should it preload that stuff? Should it give you Siri functionality? How do we do multi-person Siri? How do we do beamforming properly? So they're going to answer all these questions, and then best case, they put out an iPhone. Worst case, they put out an Apple Watch, and a couple of years later, it's much more coherent. But they tend to do that experimenting internally. And I think sometimes they do it too much, and things like MacBooks or routers or other things just languish in the meantime.
Let's take a break. We'll have more Renee Ritchie from iMore. From theregister.co.uk. I always say that so they can find it.
Yeah. We're sticking with the .co.uk URL because we're traditional that way.
It's kind
of
cute.
We like it.
Ian Thompson.
we'll be banned in Europe soon.
Yeah. He's going to...
Hey, don't worry. We'll be coming back for this country once, you know, you've screwed it up enough. Then
we will welcome you with open arms.
Yeah.
go in through the north. You and Renee can come down and invade us.
Right about now, happy. I'm thinking a queen and a prime minister looks pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff Jarvis is also here from City University of New York. BuzzMachine.com is his blog. Stop it. Stop the free plugs. He apparently is with her. We'll have more in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by GoToMeeting. If you are having phone conferences, and I think in any business you're going to have phone conferences, both with clients and with colleagues, right? Especially nowadays with businesses are distributed all over the world. I want to recommend you try something else. It's just as good as a phone conference. In fact, it could start as a phone conference, but it becomes much more very quickly. It's GoToMeeting, the high-tech leader. You can start a GoToMeeting very easily. They have a plugin for Outlook. You click a link, send the link to your client or colleague. It's very easy, even if they've never used it. They click the link, the software installs. All of a sudden, they're up and running, and it could just be a phone bridge, just like your regular conference bridge. But then, here's where the magic starts. You go, you know what? Let me show you what we're talking about. You turn on screen share. Suddenly, they're seeing your PowerPoint presentation, or maybe you're working together on a document. You can collaborate. And then even better, you say, you know what? I'd like to see how you feel about all this. Turn on your camera. I'm going to turn on my camera. Suddenly, you got crystal clear HD video. It's like being in the same room, on the same page. It is so much better, whether it's a sales demo, a presentation, a collaborative or ad hoc meeting, GoToMeeting. Every moment counts with GoToMeeting. Nobody likes meetings, but if they can be more productive, more efficient, get the job done better without travel, that's got to be good. Just ask. 9 out of 10 GoToMeeting users say they close deals more than 20% faster. Don't phone it in. Use GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, go to GoToMeeting.com. Just click on the button that says try it free there. GoToMeeting.com. Try it today. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. So, just because Google doesn't mention Chromebooks doesn't mean they're not going to... Ian's sitting here with a Pixel.
No, I've got a Pixel, and I'm a little concerned that
Jeff
they
loves
might
his Pixel.
Yeah, I think they're taking their eye off the ball when it comes to the Chromebook.
I think you're right. I'm also using the Pixel C, which I love.
Yeah, that's orphaned. You can
travel
that,
with it.
That's orphaned. That's done.
Do you have Linux on your Pixel, Leo, on your Chromebook, Leo?
Yeah, sometimes not. Crouton makes it very easy. Build.
Yeah.
You know what the problem is? It turns off the secure boot, and I really like the security of Chromebooks. And yeah. I kind of like that idea that I'm just using it as it is. Now that I can put Android on there, have you guys been playing with the Android store?
Been playing about with it. I mean, I know what you mean about the security. I take my Chromebook to DEF CON and other hacking conferences.
Really?
Yeah.
And you feel safe there?
Yeah, I lock it down.
Do you power wash it when you get home?
I basically scrub the entire thing and start again from scratch, but that's just what you do.
I put mine in carbonite. It takes about 2 minutes and 30 seconds, right?
Well, it's fast. It's easy. I mean, I recommend every time I talk to normal people, I say, get a Chromebook. Forget this Windows and Mac. Just get a Chromebook.
Wow.
Yeah, I've come 180 degrees.
Yeah, I don't go that far because you can't game on a Chromebook.
There are people who need a Windows or Mac. They know who they are. They're gamers or they're rocket ship designers.
They own Final Cut licenses.
Yeah, or they're editing video or they're photographs. They know that, and they are probably more willing to take on the responsibility of a general purpose operating system. You need to be a security expert. You need to kind of be willing to mess with it when it stops working, right? Because it's such a complex beast. Hmm. A Chromebook is for normal people, and if you don't know, you need a general purpose.
Just takes away from the hassle.
Yeah, if you know you don't need a general purpose operating system, you should be getting a Chromebook. You should only get Windows. Windows used to be the default. Oh well, getting a computer, you're going to get Windows, right? Now I think the Chromebook is the default. I think it's outsold Macintosh last quarter.
But you know what bothers me is that, I mean, all right, so if they don't want to come out with a new Chromebook for 9 months or a year,
they
but
don't need
still
to make
sell the old one.
Well, they stopped, didn't they?
If mine breaks, I'm screwed.
But bear in mind, Chromebooks, I think they've got a schedule up, but it looks like they're only going to be supported for about three and a half years.
Yes.
Now, Google may change on that when people suddenly start finding dead machines in
there. So what's Andromeda? And what does this mean for Chromebook, Chrome OS?
that was a really heavy sigh.
It's a cool sounding name rumors. That people want to associate things to.
It's just rumors that it's some sort of hybrid OS.
We've had that promise before that they were going to finally bring together Android and Chromebooks, Chrome OS, and they haven't.
Well, they showed a demo of it at I.O. They showed a demo of firing up Android apps within the Chrome OS.
Yeah, but that's
that
different.
Was just
no,
the
that's
runtime,
different.
Yeah.
Andromeda is a true combination, by rumor, of the two OSs.
Hmm.
Whereas far-fetched. No, it's been guessed for a long time and reportedly it's being tested on Nexus 9s. But my fear is that I know Google's attitude. I mean, 2 years ago when I sat down with them about a Google Plus, may it rest in peace, I made some complaints about things I wanted 3 years ago, maybe now. Things I wanted in the web version. They said, "Web, are you kidding? We don't do anything with that anymore. We just do mobile. That's all we do is mobile.
AI."
So my fear is they're going to abandon any idea of anything bigger
this
than
this is
tablet.
Google's biggest problem, the abandonment problem. Yes. You can never trust Google, whether it's Adams, Renee, or Bits, to stick with anything.
Yes.
And this Pixel thing just exacerbates the problem because we're floating in limbo. They made a very expensive Chromebook. People who use it love it.
Mm-hmm.
The story is internally, this is, you know, people who, inside Google love it. But they have not. Now, because Google's Chrome OS and Chrome browser and Android are open source projects, what happens is code leaks out. And that's why we know about Andromeda. We also, in the code, see traces of a new Pixel, codenamed Bison, that may, you know, so you can start to see that in the code base. But I think I'd be very nervous.
I tend to think, like, when you hear stories about iOS and macOS, for example, merging, or when you hear stories about Chrome and Android merging, these are two very, very different things with very different runtimes, experiences, security models, and all these things. And it's often, I think often we see, you know, it makes sense to us because all we see is the front. And for an individual, the interface is the application. So we see these front ends and we think, oh, I could just throw this app on here. But, you know, that's not how the plumbing works. And I think if there is an Andromeda or there is a successor to all these operating systems, it's something that comes next. It's what we did when we launched mobile to begin with. They think it over, they take the best from both things, and they build a platform from the drivers back on up that does all the things they want it to do instead of some sort of hodgepodge Frankenstein OS that'll really make nobody happy.
It's hard to do.
A security nightmare.
And I'm not sure exactly I understand the business rationale for doing it either.
It makes you understand why Amazon makes you write the press release first before you make the product.
Right. Jeff Bezos very famously, you know, when you present something, you write the press release to present it. Yeah. Google's autonomous car just passed 2 million miles. That's a lot of miles. I was talking on a radio show. I was doing a radio show in San Francisco this week, and somebody called in and said, look how unreliable software is. Are you going to really trust your life to software? And I had to point out, well,
we trusted to taxi drivers who could be, you know, sort of hyped up on coffee.
The worst software is wetware. So the first million miles took 6 years. The next million, 16 months.
I still want to see it like in Canada or in Russia or somewhere where there's precipitation to see if it thinks that rain
snow
is a wall.
Yeah.
It was interesting. We got offered a ride in the Google car, but they said you can't write about it if we do take you on.
What?
Well, you can drive about it, but you can't write about it.
So you can experience it, but you can't tell anybody.
Yeah, but it's like, well, we're journalists, so we've got to write about it.
Yeah,
so
what's
thank
the point?
You. Yeah. It's but I don't know.
Get it. Lots of people have written about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's just that we're not Google's flavor of the month over the last couple of years. But, I mean, the self-driving car is all very good, but nobody has yet worked out. Okay, supposing they do get it perfected. California has now said autonomous cars can drive in a limited fashion on their roads. Go 10 years down the line when we've got autonomous trucks and autonomous taxis and the rest of it. What are the truck drivers and the taxi drivers and the school bus drivers going to do? They're not going to be able to retrain for jobs at Google.
No,
so
no.
You've just basically cut about 5 million people out of the economy.
Yeah.
So if you're a truck driver or a taxi driver, I wouldn't advise your kids to get into your profession.
Yeah. No, your kids. What about you 10 years from now? This is trouble.
Well, unless you need someone in those trucks to make sure they can grab the wheel when the software throws it back at the human because it just doesn't know what to do.
Well, and I should point out that
Coyote. Ah!
While that's terrible news for people who drive, and there's a lot of them, doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
No, it almost happens. No, it absolutely will happen. I'm just saying that nobody is actually talking about what happens then. Yeah. You know, I mean,
there was a story about Uber, like basically telling people that they're going to go driverless, and they're hiring all these people as interim flesh bags until they get the driverless technology.
You know, if you were a wonderful footman, you were great at a horse and buggy operation. You're out of work too, and
wooden toymakers.
This is the way it goes. But when we had the first big wave of industrialization, it caused social chaos for 50 years. You had revolutions across Europe.
You don't think that's what's happening right now?
It's getting very, very, very close to that.
You don't think that's exactly what you're seeing?
The story that I'm seeing often now is that and this is going to have a big effect on all of us who are around and love technology. Is that the impact on jobs is not immigrants to all those who are voting for Donald Trump. Mm. It is technology.
Exactly.
But whatever the reason, that's the appeal of a Donald Trump or a Brexit is why we are dying here. Help us out.
Leo, when the enemy becomes technology, what happens then?
I mean, you look at what happens with
Ned
big
Ludd
happens. After technology in Europe.
And the
Luddite when the masses go against technology. That's a different story.
Ned Ludd happens.
Yeah. Right?
Yes. Yes.
And yeah, and then things, but Ned Ludd failed. This is the whole thing. And people who go
ultimately, this will fail.
Yeah,
there's
people
no
who go against technology oh, will yeah, fail.
It's going to happen unless we were reduced to the Stone Age. It's going to happen.
Yeah, but what worries me is that writing mobs don't build chip fabs. You know, if we're going to go through like a 20 or 30 year period of complete anarchy, then we're losing out on a big opportunity. Because if we just thought about it a little bit beforehand, we could avoid all that and get all the benefits.
Ah, I like it. So who's going to do that? Let me just
vote for that. I was going to say, let's have politicians come up with this, but yeah, so much not going to happen.
Can I vote for that person? Who's that person?
There's some interesting research.
And what would you do? Would you create...
President Snowden.
Is it training? Is it... What would you do?
We already make enough food to feed everybody on the planet.
Well, that's what Mark Andreessen says is, hey, everything's just going to become effectively cheap or free, so it doesn't matter if you have a job.
Yeah, there's some merit to that, but I've got my doubts about it.
Yeah,
Gene Roddenberry did that 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Was that a Star Trek episode?
Well, I think their entire society was based on no money, right? People pursued either careers and leisure activities to satisfy their own inner workings.
Oh, boy, now I'm depressed.
Hey, wait until the presidential debate, then you can get really depressed.
Hugging baby pandas, Leo. Just keep thinking about hugging baby pandas.
You know, it's really...
They even ruined cats for us now.
Pussycats. It's really interesting.
You said it, I didn't.
It's really interesting as I've traveled last couple of weeks. The reluctance... I saw it here in the States. People are very reluctant to talk about the election. I think mostly because you're afraid you'll get in a fist fight because you don't know. Mm. But even when we were traveling around, in the past, people have, tour guides or people you meet on the street might have asked you about the political scene in the United States. Nobody does anymore. They don't say,
I bring it up. I bring it up when I do talks to foreign visitors, when I do talks in Europe or around the world, to talks in Mexico especially, and I apologize for what's happening. I get applause. It's the easiest applause.
Yeah,
line.
They want you to break the ice, but I think that they are very nervous about bringing it up at all. If you break the ice, that's different.
But they'll talk about it then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
but you have a split marriage, no?
Not that split. Not that split, my friend.
I don't know. In the UK, we have a phrase, if you want polite conversation, you don't bring up politics or religion. And I guess it's the same.
In America, money.
Yeah.
I've been canvassing in Pennsylvania for the last... Every weekend, I go over to Pennsylvania now. And this was the last weekend I could have registered. Last weekend, I was in... I think it was Allentown. And that was yesterday. I was in Easton last weekend. And I go up to a house... And the address they give me, and a very nice woman answers the door, and she says, "Well, I'm for Trump, and my husband's for Clinton."
Wow.
She says, "My kids are also split, Trump for Clinton." And I said, "I don't want to be at your Thanksgiving."
No,
I don't want to be anywhere
near
what
you
do house.
Is you just don't talk about politics.
You don't talk
you
about
watch Twitch.
No.
Yeah, and that's why we don't talk about politics here.
I know.
Moving
I know. We don't. I know.
No, it's hard not to. It's hard not to because
it is
for the next 30 days. This is all it's going to occupy.
Is it another 30 days?
30 days. Yeah. My advice is to drink heavily.
There are legitimate tech angles galore here.
Oh, there's tons.
The use of Twitter is absolutely fascinating.
Let's talk about Twitter. I want to take a break, but let's talk about Twitter because Twitter had some very bad news this week.
Yeah.
Are you going to buy him, Leo? You're the only one left.
I think the price might drop low enough that I could buy
Twitter. Reunification. Twitter.
And you know what? If I bought Twitter, I would put them out of business, but we'll talk about that in a second. First, I'm not a fan. Used to be a fan. I used to be the person with the most followers on Twitter.
And I'll tell you,
long ago that was. I was number one on Twitter with 5,000 followers.
And then you went to Jaiku.
I thought it was 40,000.
No, it was 5,000 followers. And then it was me and Kevin Rose. And Kevin just surpassed me. And then this guy named Ashton Kutcher came along.
A plus K.
And that was it. He got to 1 million and that was it. I was just an also-ran. But in my heyday, yeah, it was probably like 2008. I think it was 2008.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
Back when I was on Twitter.
That's going to be my epitaph. I used to be number one on Twitter.
This was all Fields when I was a boy.
Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. You know what else you don't need anymore? A trip to the post office. Stamps.com lets you do everything you do at the post office from your computer and your desk. Talk about disintermediation. This is awesome. But I got to tell you, the post office loves Stamps.com. Because if you're still using the post office, right? But it makes the post office as easy to use as anything. You know, you don't have to get up from your desk. With Stamps.com, you buy and print. Real U.S. postage from your computer and your printer. No postage meter. No. No expensive ink, nothing. Just your computer and your printer. You got everything you need. It'll print right on an envelope. That means it'll put your corporate logo. It'll fill in the return address automatically. It'll even pull the sender, the recipient's address from a website, an address book. It works with everything. You can also do, like, for instance, if, let's say you've got customs forms or forms to fill out for express mail or certified mail. It'll fill those out. It pulls all that information right from your address book. You'll even send it out an email saying, hey, your certified mail's on its way. Keep an eye out for it. It prints up labels for any kind of package. Anything you would do at the post office, you can do at Stamps.com. And when you're done with all your mailing, you call. You just press a button in the Stamps.com interface, and the postman comes and picks it up. And that's awesome. We've got a special trial for Stamps.com. If you do any kind of mailing at all in your business, if you're a seller on eBay or Etsy or Amazon, if you send bills out, if you send out mailings, you've got to have a Stamps.com account. You've just got to. I don't know how you could survive without one. Especially as we get closer to the holiday season and the post office gets more and more crowded. That's amateur hour. The pros use Stamps.com. So here's the deal. Go to Stamps.com. You see the microphone on the website. And it's in the upper right-hand corner. It says, heard us on the radio or podcast. Click here. Click that. Type in TWIT as the offer code. That does two things. It lets them know you heard it on this show, which is important to me. It helps us, you know, monetize our product here. We don't charge you. But if you could use this product, you should just put the word TWIT in there. Then they're going to benefit you because you're going to get this great thing. Of course, you're getting a free trial of Stamps.com, but you also get a digital scale worth $50. That's a USB scale. Make sure you never under or overpay on postage again. You always have exactly the right postage. Now, there is a shipping and handling fee, I think, of $5, but they're going to give you a $5 supply kit to make up for that. And even better, $55 in free postage. Free postage, you have to use it over the first few months of your account, but that is a great deal. Stamps.com. Click the microphone, use the offer code TWIT, try it for free, get all that benefit. You're going to love it. It's the pro way to do mailing, Stamps.com. Jeff Jarvis is here. Love having you, Jeff. It's nice to see you. I missed you. Also, my good friend Ian Thompson from The Register, all my good friends from iMore.com. Renee Ritchie. We had scheduled Ben Thompson. I think he either forgot or lost his connection. We'll get him back at another time for just a tech.
At the risk of doing more breaking news in politics.
What else?
And I hesitate to mention this, but 11 minutes ago, Trump was live on Facebook Live with Clinton accusers.
You know what's? I have to say one thing about Donald Trump is he is a master of social media.
An evil master at that, but
well,
yes, he is.
Well, it depends on how you feel about him. If you like him, then he's a brilliant master, but he's mastered Twitter. It's interesting to see him using Facebook now.
But yeah. It has turned around and bitten him on the bum a bit, because all these things that he's been talking about for the last 2 or 3 years are now being pulled back and used against him.
Yeah.
You know, there is a record online and he can't deny it.
Well, but that's the nature of the world, whether you set it on camera or on tape.
This is why you never say anything online that you can justify to your family.
Well, yeah. I mean, anytime we want to talk about anything, we do it in person, not over a recorded medium or email. If you want privacy, the only way to do it is to go out in a park naked.
Disassemble your wireless phone.
Yeah. Leave your phone behind.
Yeah.
And stand in the middle of a field.
Or in a clown costume.
Oh, the satellites can see you. They can read
Clowns are interesting. We'll get to Twitter in a second. Clowns are interesting. So I don't think there have really been that many incidents of clowns.
I agree. There have not been.
But no. Because there's all these fake news sites now, you cannot believe anything you read on the internet anymore. Hundreds of stories about clown sightings, scary clowns, axes, clowns grabbing children. And people can't tell when they see this on Facebook or Twitter if it's real or not. They believe it. And so everybody in the world, I was at the gym yesterday in spin class. They couldn't stop talking about clowns.
I blame Stephen King.
I said, yeah, it's it. Just, I said,
I'm just
guys,
throwing galaxy notes at them. And
this is not a widespread problem. These are fake news stories, but no one knows the difference anymore.
Right? I was there many years ago. I was a midnight rewrite guy at the Chicago Tribune, and there was a story of a loose kangaroo in Chicago, and I ended up on the BBC doing like weekly reports about this. Right, and it turns out that's a regular thing. There are loose kangaroos supposedly in cities. They get into boxing matches with people, and this is a story that goes. It's a very Snopesy thing, long before Snopes. And clowns.
And it never happened. There was never a kangaroo.
Sewers, right? I don't think so. No.
You have alligators in your sewers, Jeff. How are you going to believe
you?
Alligators
in sewers. Yeah. You have clowns in the woods. Yeah. The great thing about the clown story is, indeed, clowns do creep me and freak me out.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, they're
this off. This is. There's a guy at UC Berkeley. I can't remember his name. Jeff Dunnis or something, who specializes in sick joke cycles. He's a sociologist. And his theory is that, you know, and, you know, there were the elephant jokes. His theory is these jokes are an outlet for taboo subjects. He says the elephant jokes actually are racist, but you would say it would happen during the civil rights era that became very popular. It was an escape valve for some deep existential angst people were feeling. So they tell these jokes, or the dead baby cycle. There were all these dead baby jokes right about during Roe v. Wade, when abortion started becoming a big topic in the national psyche. And it was a way of diffusing these. And I think the clowns, there's something going on in the psyche that it's diffusing something. Guess what? Just a theory.
Where are the fake clownish
in
them?
Our psyche at the moment?
Our psyches are burning right now.
You weren't here for this, Leo, but there was Andy covered a story on MacBreak about how this video is telling people they could just drill a hole in their iPhone to get the headphone jack.
Oh, that's
back.
Hilarious.
Nobody fell for that. Did anybody fall?
Yes. Oh, and
nobody.
The year before, you could microwave to charge it. The year before that, you could throw it in a sink. And,
yeah, but
and
really,
every year.
Did anybody drill a hole in their iPhone? No.
Nobody knows, because the comments could be as fake as the videos.
Yeah.
I would be shocked.
Well, I wouldn't be, but I'm used to dealing with human stupidity, and it's just...
How stupid do you have to be to drill a hole in your iPhone? Seriously.
It lets the pressure out.
Nobody did that. That's like clowns in the woods. I think it's just another urban legend, I think.
Yeah.
Well. Anyway, Twitter. So Twitter's for sale, right? We agree that Twitter's for sale.
It's option B, plan B.
Apparently, there's been a battle in the boardroom. We got to get Nick Bilton in here, because he's the only guy who really knows what's going down at Twitter. But there's a battle in the boardroom. Jack Dorsey does not want to sell Twitter. He wants to continue to be CEO. Ev Williams, one of its founders, says, yeah, it's time. We got to sell this thing before it all collapses in on us.
Well, there's nothing left to sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that started the rumors. Twitter's stock price went up, right? Because, well, that could be good.
Well, hell, Ev said it publicly.
Right. And then
publicly, they got to look at options.
Google says, yeah, no. And who else? Microsoft
Disney.
Disney. Said, well, no. The big one was Disney.
Was, yeah.
Apple says, yeah, no. The big one, then the stock really went up. Disney. Yeah, Disney says, yeah, no.
We were kind of in competition in the office as to who was going to be saying no next. Bernie Sanders says he won't buy Twitter next as well.
So Salesforce is the last man standing. Mark
Benioff.
Never
going to happen.
But apparently all of the shareholders are running to Mark saying, what, are you crazy?
Yeah.
And you can't, I mean, you can kind
we
of
have
ignore.
We chatter. It's good enough.
You can kind of ignore the shareholders, but not really. Yeah. And apparently the institutional shareholders, including Fidelity, which has double-digit percentage of stock in Salesforce, is saying, yeah, no, Mark, no.
Isn't it a perfect match for Google's Jaiku purchase, Leo? I mean, they could just make one awesome workout.
So now Twitter's tanking
in
the stock market.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, they tried
when
to
it's
build
never a- been more relevant in terms of popular culture.
Well, and this is Twitter in a nutshell. At the same time as it's horrific and horrible and disgusting, it's also unbelievably fascinating.
Yeah. And changing the world.
You know, after the debate... here I am in the middle of nowhere, I got no connection to anything, but I'm able to scan Twitter to see what people are saying. And it's really the best way to kind of...
If you want the raw data feed of what's going on...
Yeah.
You know,
well, I question how good it is, because at most there's 300 million users. Yeah. Probably more than half of those, probably only 100 million are real people. And only a half of that really are active. Hmm. So it's a tiny sample. But it's a fascinating sample. It's every journalist, right?
It's an incredibly engaged sampling.
And it's and it's interesting people. It's journalists and
And
psychos.
But at the same time...
Politicians.
But you've got to... The economic realities can't be ignored. It has never made a profit. It will never make a profit in its current format. The only value that it has is in the data that's collected about its users. And that's not worth $30
billion. No. It's not... Yeah, no. Even at a discounted price, they were talking, what was it, $42 per user?
Yeah,
which is a fraction of what Facebook is worth per user.
Exactly.
It's still not worth it.
And Facebook has so much more useful stuff on users.
Google's probably the only company that could actually use Twitter's information.
They would sort of be like a custodian. They would buy it like as a foster child and sort of put it in one wing.
But the brand damage to them.
That's the problem.
Then every schmucky thing that's said.
That's the real problem.
Blamed for it.
Nobody wants to own
Europe?
Twitter. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wants to own Twitter because nobody wants the Twitter stank to rub off on them.
Nobody wants the unedited voice of the people.
Well, I don't know. It is particularly good at pulling out the worst of the worst of a lot of people as well. I don't think it's an accurate sampling of us because there's some pretty bad humanity on there.
By the way, John Ledger has just tweeted that T-Mobile is suspending sales of Samsung's Galaxy Note 7.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All sales suspended.
Out of abundance of caution.
Yeah, well, joining Verizon.
AT&T.
Bye-bye.
They've got to do a full Chipotle,
Full Chipotle.
I'm having to steal that, my friend. That's spot on.
Time for the full Chipotle. So whether Twitter... Now, I look at... Okay, so 4chan's struggling, right? 4chan, the original meme factory. Poole sold it. Chris Poole sold it.
Do we ever know?
Pardon me?
Do we ever know? For how much?
Can't have been much. Moot never made any money on it.
No.
Sold it. Now the guy who owns it saying we're losing our shirt here. We're running out of money because nobody wants an ad on 4chan.
No. No. Well, okay. Nobody's selling anything legal wants an ad on 4chan.
I feel like Twitter and Reddit are the next dominoes to fall in this. And here's the common thread: anonymity.
Yes.
What we've learned is that while anonymity has some good reasons for it, it also allows the worst of us.
What was that famous joke, right? Anonymity plus internet access plus broadcast equals the, I think it was Penny Arcade did that famous cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I agree we should have anonymity, but I'm rethinking this idea. I think, part of it was I had this utopian notion that the internet, true democracy, would give everybody a voice, and that could only be for the good. And then I found out that a very, very tiny percentage of people are horrible. And the problem is their voice is amplified to the point where, what's that book say?
I'm buying books now about civility.
Civility is... I hate to admit it, but maybe Andrew Keene was right. Andrew Keene, remember?
Oh, God, please.
He wrote
your
the
mouth.
Book, The Cult of the, Cult of the Amateur. He was arguing that there is a reason why the elites run things.
No.
I think it's anonymity.
He's arguing in the defense of elites and institutions.
Right.
And
he's not far wrong.
No. The problem is this, Leo. So all right, pardon me, drinking game time. I happen to have a glass of wine right here.
Thank you.
So from Gutenberg, pardon me, on, right, I had to write a piece recently about Martin Luther. And if we're in the year 1450 was the press, 1475 is where we are now versus the web, right? Martin Luther was born in 1483, and he didn't start publishing until about 1505. Our Martin Luther isn't even born yet. So it's too soon to say, forget all the future. Let's hold on to the old institutions. Let's keep the aristocracy. No, right? But we haven't created the replacements. In the Arab Spring, we tore down. We didn't build up.
Right.
Donald Trump and the Republican Party, they tore down. They haven't built up.
Right.
This is the era of tearing down. Now, Martin Luther did start a new – he tore down the Catholic Church, but he built a new church. And we're not yet at that stage. where we're building what's new. So I do think there is a call to civility. There is a call to rethinking the notion of building civilization on the net. But that does not mean that we kill the future and retain the past. That ain't working.
So elitism is part of the past that you do want to discard.
Well, the great paradox of Trump. I'm not getting political, don't worry. But here's a guy with gold toilets whose entire appeal is down with the elites.
What if I say instead of elites, meritocracy?
No, I think that's wrong because merit's not a bad thing. People aren't against true merit, I don't think.
Well, that's what
unearned merit, born merit.
Oh, I agree with you, but highly educated.
Like your British friend next to you.
hey listen, he's got a posh accent.
Social mobility in this country is worse than it is in the UK at the moment.
Really?
How big a problem you've got.
Yeah.
Really?
The entrenchment of
Ian's right, yeah.
It's for the last 5 or 6 years, London School of Economics has been doing a study on this. It's worse over here, and I never thought I'd see that. It's one of the reasons
The rejection of science in North America is appalling. But I think we were at a point where we're not mature enough to be able to have civilization and anonymity at the same time. Because we quickly, when you're anonymous, you quickly forget about the repercussions of your actions. You're almost drunk. You're power crazy on the anonymity. You think suddenly all your darker angels can come out and play without any fear of repercussion. So I think anonymity definitely has value, like you said. But when you get a lot of people together into groups, we have not shown the responsibility needed for it.
So here's the big question that I always wonder is does openness necessarily breed trolls? Is there an opportunity to have openness in a way that can be civil?
Do you equate openness with anonymity? I think anonymity breeds trolls.
No, I disagree because I can name plenty of a-holes by name.
maybe. I mean, but at least
anonymity is not it. No, I think that openness allows anyone to do anything. And, you know, I celebrate that as a rule. How do limits get put on?
Is there an equal and opposite people who are just so pious that they're jerks as well? I mean, I think there's probably both ends. We just don't see it as much.
Yeah, the other thing is the freedom of speech is also the freedom to edit. Yes. And this is where people, and I think Facebook has done some really boneheaded things like killing the napalm photo, not releasing the pornography of that photo was not.
Yeah, but that was a mechanical thing that they reversed right away.
That was boneheaded. Right?
Yeah, but it was mechanical and they reversed it.
But it was still their right. At some level, it is their right to decide what does and does not go on their platform.
If you're a publisher, you have editing power.
Yes, and that is a mode of freedom of speech, too, so that, you know, you can be 4chan and anything goes. You can be Reddit and almost anything goes. And those are places where you can go and do that. But if you're Facebook or Twitter, do you choose not to be that? Now, Facebook chooses not to be that. You're right, Leo, because of identity, it enables that process. But it's not. There's plenty of jerks on Facebook.
I don't know. It rises to the same level, though, does it?
No, not Twitter, quite the same level. It's an aid, but it's not a solution.
I feel like Facebook and originally Google Plus, because of their real names policy, has really avoided a lot of the
Google Plus Twitter because of the user control.
Oh, maybe.
And Twitter also, I think the frustration was that they didn't do things when it seemed like they could. Like, for example, you could give people absolute freedom of speech in their own timeline, but the minute they put an at mention in it, not have that same level of freedom because now you're involving other people. And it just looked like there are probably 7 or 8 different solutions, and it looked like they implemented none of them. And I think that's where you can argue that Instagram or Facebook.
So, okay, assuming there is a technological solution to Twitter's pollution problem. I'll call it a pollution problem, right? You've got a stream with some really great stuff, but there's chunks floating in it, and we'd like to get the chunks out.
Ooh.
Assuming there is a solution, who should buy Twitter?
Some oligarch.
Yeah.
Putin. Donald Trump. Well, I saw on Twitter just now, a guy named Mike Sheridan said that Donald Trump buys Twitter. He needs it.
He can't afford it. I mean, I think that's the...
Oh, by the time all this is done, he may be able to.
Yeah, I didn't see
this. Certainly not a brand, that's why Disney never made sense.
Now, Disney has to keep a clean image, ultimately.
Absolutely,
right?
Emily. Yeah. Never made sense.
And frankly, so does Apple and Google.
Yep.
I think what's going to happen is some hedge fund or private equity group will buy up Twitter, think we can make a profit out of this, futz about with the actual format of the platform and kill it.
Who's the ones who bought Palm, right? It's Altimeter Group. Some same people who bought Palm can buy Twitter.
But we don't have Mad King Leo running HP in the same way that we had with Palm. You know, I mean, the kind of people with enough money to buy it now, I think, are going to be the private equity and hedge fund crowds.
That actually makes sense. And they've got the hubris to think they can fix it.
Exactly.
If I were one of those guys, the first thing, though, I would do is canvas the smartest minds. What is the solution? What is the fix? What is the filtration system? And how would it work? And could we implement that? Because you could polish this turd and turn it into something of great value. I mean, I'm not disagreeing. There's huge value in Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's an iconic brand, and a lot of people love it.
Not just the brand, the actual content.
Well, yeah, but I mean, people actually love it. They use it on a regular basis. That's fine. But it's making money out of it. And they've had years now to try and make money out of it, and they can't do it.
I think you're right, Ian. So, but you're both right. Because Leo's saying there's an insight here, which you know, with Ev has always had. Blogger was an insight that changed the world. Blogger itself was never a good business. Twitter was an insight that changed the world, never a good business. But so let's say that Twitter gets bought by a hedge fund and ruined, or gets bought by Verizon and gets ruined. But where does that insight go? If you were going to build something new, knowing what we know about Twitter, what would you build?
That's interesting. And people something with no anonymity. Leave anonymity to the other guys.
Now you see,
anonymity is troubling. Not only is it hard to say, it's troubling.
Two layers, that there's a truly verified layer that has Google Plus like control, and yeah, there may be a crap layer.
Yeah, Twitter's moved in that direction, right? And then you could say,
barely.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I think there is a role for anonymity in that it gives people a way that they can speak out. And the initial idea behind it was good in that you judge people based on what they had said in the past, and you made your judgments about their personality that way. But it's broken down for multiple reasons, chiefly that you can make as many anonymous accounts as you like and be as nasty as you like. And
I should point out, by the way, that we have a very wonderful chat room that embraces anonymity. That you can use a handle. You are totally anonymous in there. And the reason it works is we have constant moderation and cultivation, and we pay attention to it. And that's true of any anonymous. Same thing with forums. You know, every forum's gone through that period of, if you ignore it, the weeds grow, and pretty soon nobody wants to be there.
We have dozens of moderators in our forums.
Moderation, though, is the solution. Obviously, Twitter can't do that.
Yeah, no, I mean, we moderate our own forums, and it's just you need to have someone in there saying, no, that's stupid, don't do it.
And it's not as simple as just kicking people out. It's actually working with people and cultivating people.
Yeah, making them part of the community.
Educating
them. Putting some value into the communication platform.
So there's breaking news on two fronts.
Uh-oh. Now what?
Number one, Billy Bush just got suspended.
Good. I don't think he should have come to work tomorrow.
Number two, Zuckerberg is still grilling. He now has friends with him. There's smoke rising.
Grilling.
He's got a beard.
I got to go back to his
head. No one told me I was going to be this way.
He has 122,000 followers right now. Live.
Is he going to counter-program the debates? Are they going to be able to have to choose between Zuckerberg's barbecue and the debates?
Oh, that's interesting. Like that, or what about watching with Mark?
That would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been drinking some Anchor Steam recently.
Yeah, good local beer.
Is it? Great. It's
beer. All right, well, there you go. Now I think that's probably where...
I think I saw Sam Lesson in the photo a minute ago.
Is that Sam?
Got into rotation.
No, I think Sam was in a minute ago.
Sam worked at Facebook, but no longer does.
Hi from Puerto Rico.
I think I did. I could be wrong. I saw somebody come by real quick.
Yeah, Sam's a great guy. What's Mark drinking? What's that? What's he drinking?
Looks like San Pellegrino.
Leticia Sophia, what kind of sides are we having? You know... I'm a purist. When I smoke meat, we just I'm the meat chef. Priscilla's made Brussels sprouts and broccoli.
Yeah, that's Sam.
There's Sam.
Yep. Maxima helped to make.
We just love it. Somebody.
I wanna go to that party.
I'm just waiting for somebody to not realize that the camera's turned on. Somebody who's wankered on too many Anchor Steam.
Just tripping across.
Was there someone behind that fence? What are the neighbors doing right now? Are they peeking over there?
No. He bought the neighborhood. Remember?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah,
that fence is purely aesthetic.
It's a Hollywood.
It's a Hollywood fence. Wow.
Sitting in our back.
123,000 people watching Wayne's World, basically. It makes me sad that I built this studio, this is crazy talk.
Party on, Zuck.
Party on, Zuck. Party on, Zuck.
I wonder if that's a Mevo camera.
Look. Oh, he's got emotional symbols floating. Maybe it's only when it's little that you get that. The emotional, you know, the little...
There's some angry faces.
Uh-oh. Sad. Oh. It's over. don't be sad that it's over. Be happy that it happened, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, celebrate that it existed. That you got to be part of that brief moment in history.
I'm just glad I wasn't here all week. I don't know what happened, but fortunately they've created a small movie to dramatize the events of last week at TWiT. Let's all watch together.
On TWiT.
This is the first Gears of War for the Xbox One console. If you have an Xbox One and you want a good online shooter, cool. If you've got a Windows 10 PC that's pretty powerful, definitely get this.
Yeah, but it's not in VR. So, I mean...
TWiT live specials.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jason Howell, and I'm here at Oculus Connect 3. largely, this event feels like a coming out party for the Oculus Touch controller to really showcase how much that can enhance these experiences and move it into the next dimension.
All about Android.
Today marked the big event in San Francisco where Google made many announcements of new hardware. But one of the most important things that came out of it, I think, was their new marketing strategy around the term made by Google. But they made it very, very clear that like the Pixel phones, which we'll talk about, as well as the other items, were designed by Google.
I've wanted an iPhone that runs Android forever, and today I have one.
Wow, that's an interesting...
I know that about you, Jerry.
That's interesting.
The new screensavers.
I don't think that's...
The PlayStation VR, it comes out next week.
This is bizarre, but it's actually really good, the head tracking. I couldn't get to the hot dog, so the freezer was under this table, so I couldn't get to it. So I just defaced the whole place is ruined. I'm never getting that job back.
TWiT. Tell your boss it's job related.
It is. Coming up, a great week ahead. Megan Maroney, what you working on?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here are a few things that we will be keeping a close eye on in the coming week. The PlayStation VR officially launches in the U.S. this week on October 13th. It's planned for a midnight release, and many GameStops and Best Buy stores will be open. 8 physical games will be available that day as well. If you're willing to wait, the Oculus Touch is available to pre-order this week on October 10th and will be available for the Rift on December 6th for $199. Facebook at Work launches this week at an event in London on Monday, October 10th. This is the social network's business version of what is arguably the best tool man has ever invented to waste time. October 11th is also Ada Lovelace Day, an international holiday held every second Tuesday in October to help spread the good news of women in STEM fields. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Megan Maroney. Tech News Today is your daily dose of tech news every Monday through Friday. Catch it at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC, or watch it on demand at our website, twit.tv, or wherever you get your podcasts. By the way, there's another way you can get your daily dose of tech news. We are now part of the Amazon Echo, awesome. The Flash Briefing. They opened up the Flash Briefing to a lot more outlets. They invited us. We were thrilled to participate. So if you have an Amazon Echo, open the app and search for TWiT in the Flash Briefing settings and add us. We make new content every day. It'll be stuff from this show, the new Screensavers, TNT, and other shows as well. A great way to start your morning. Just a short hit of TWiT on your Amazon Echo. Search for it on your Alexa app. Jeff Jarvis is here from CUNY. He is, of course, our regular on This Week in Google. Will you be here Wednesday for TWiG?
Yes, I will. Good. Now that you're finally back.
I'm thrilled to be back. I had a kind of a Jeff Jarvis travel experience all over the world.
Oh, no, I don't go on luxury ships. How were the ships?
We were on the Regent Seven Seas Cruise. It was very nice. Good food, great service, nice people.
No, not
all of them. How do you compare that 80s? To the river thing? How the river thing versus the ocean?
The nice thing about the river thing is it doesn't rock. The emotion of the ocean is unpredictable, and we had a couple of rocky days. Don't bother me, but if they bother you, you probably shouldn't go on a cruise. And then the other thing about riverboats is they're slow, and pretty much everywhere they go, you're in town. You could be out of town. Although this was a small enough ship that we were in really good locations everywhere. It was pretty fun.
Looks right? Fantastic.
It was. Had a great time. Vacation.
And you were a spiffy dresser, Leo.
You like the pink poncho? Is that what you're talking about?
No, like the tux, the suits, the tuxes. I mean.
Hey, you know, when you're living the life of Riley, you've got to dress the part.
It was almost an Ian Fleming novel.
Bond. Also, from the Register, register.co.uk, my good friend Ian Thompson. Always great to have you here.
Always good.
And from imore.com, Renee Ritchie. Let's talk about Yahoo next, okay?
Okay.
Fire up your Yahoo.
But I don't know if I can stand the tragedy of it, the pathos.
It's so sad, isn't it? I feel like Twitter's moving in that way too, kind of.
We had to write an article about how to get off Yahoo, because you can't just delete your account. We had to write like how to delete all the
data. I have that question, as a matter of fact. Good. All right. I want to talk about that. I am on a boat with very little internet connectivity, desperately trying to delete my Yahoo account. Quick! I decided not to. I turned on two-factor authentication. I figured that'd be enough.
They deleted it for me years ago.
I'm glad they
did. If I didn't use it for a while, they killed the account.
Yeah, remember
they used about that, but now I'm happy.
Yeah.
It was Steve Gibson who actually made me kind of nervous about it, because he was saying, like, you forget, like, these are digital artifacts and you forget what's tied to your Yahoo account and what recovery emails it's used for and what data is in all the email you've got accumulated there in terms of other accounts and other access points. And I stopped to think about it and I said, I just did exactly what he said. I made a pseudo random blob and I did not save it to one password. Oh, and it's just, it's empty now and I'm not getting back into it.
Yeah, we did a quick poll around the office and there were like six of us there. Everyone had a Yahoo account. Only two people had actually used it for anything in the last year. But when you think, you're right, when you think about what's actually on there from all the years past, it's kind of scary stuff. And Yahoo really have screwed the pooch on this one in a very bad way.
We'll explain in moments, but first a word from audible.com. One thing I did bring, and I will always bring anytime I'm on a long plane flight or a cruise, I bring books, but I don't bring stacks of paper of dead trees. I don't even bring a Kindle. I bring my audiobooks because I have the Audible app on all my devices. And I brought 12 audiobooks. And I ended up buying another one because we were in Russia. And right about when we were in Russia, I started hearing about this new book about the Romanovs. Oh, what a story that is. 300 years of crazy. It makes you feel a lot better about modern times when you realize how crazy it was in the old days. I'll tell you about that in a second, but let me first tell you about how you can get it for free at audible.com. Audible is the internet bookstore for audiobooks. I've been a member, a subscriber for 16 years, since the year 2000 when I had a horrific commute. It saved my life. I've read hundreds of books that I probably wouldn't have read had I not had an Audible account. And I just love it. Fiction, nonfiction, science fiction. I listen to Audible all the time. Now, if you go right now to audible.com/twit2, that's audible.com/twit and the number 2, we're going to hook you up with the Platinum account. That's a 2-book-a-month subscription. It also includes a daily digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, so you can get your news that way, too. Audible really is great audio content of all kinds. Great courses are on there, too. So you can take the best college courses in the world as part of your Audible subscription, which is great. You're going to be able to pick 2 books. Now, the subscription is free for the first 30 days. So pick 2 books. Girl on the Train. Oh, before you see the movie, read the book. What a great book that is. Get those 2 books. Listen. Cancel anytime in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing, but you get to keep those books forever. So that's kind of nice. Audible is just like a regular bookstore where those books are yours and you can download them anytime. I have a lot of older books, too, that I have from Audible that I wanted to re-listen to. So go to audible.com/twit2. The Romanovs, great book. Started, of course, in the 1613, I think it was, when the first Romanov czar of Russia, and ended with Nicholas, Tsar Nicholas, who's had you know, was killed by the Bolsheviks. This is it. What a great story, 1613 to 1918. And when you listen, though, it does make you feel a little bit better about modern times, as bad as it is.
At least we haven't sunk that low.
We have not sunk that low. There has been some progress. It's a great book. It is a fascinating book. And a lot of people are celebrating it as a great history of the Russian czars. You could get that book and something else. Audible.com/twit2. 2 books waiting for you for free. Get them. Get them. Yahoo. Oh, my God. Now it's gotten so bad that Verizon has said, can we get $1 billion back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
$1 billion back because we are buying damaged goods. So first there was the breach. That's the first thing that happened. It was hundreds of millions of accounts, right?
500 million by some accounts.
The biggest breach of data ever. I did not get to hear Security Now. Were the I presume this stuff was hashed, at least, right?
Passwords were hashed and some security questions were hashed, but only some of them.
Although I think Steve was explaining that they would migrate you to a better hash if you relogged in, but many people never relogged in, so they were stuck on the old hash, which
and,
is not
and
very
And weak
secure
hashes
anymore.
Are easily broken.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
In fact, if you have a bad password, even good hashes are easily broken. Yeah. 500 million accounts. So that was the first thing I heard.
How long? That, I mean, in fact, we didn't know.
Yeah, it was 2 years.
They didn't know for how long, and then we didn't know for how long.
At least four years. So if you ever had a Yahoo account ever, you're screwed.
Which includes Flickr, because people don't think about it.
But Flickr is Yahoo. Right. And by the way, Yahoo knew about it in August.
Yeah.
Didn't say anything.
Why did it take so long for Yahoo to know that it existed? Is that they have a legitimate excuse for that or not?
It sounded like they didn't care about security at a very deep corporate level. Like people brought it up to them internally, and it was told it was not a priority to them.
Yeah,
unless they were doing it on behalf of the NSA and the CIA and the FBI, but that's another story.
Some Yahoo staffers actually did go to the New York Times over this, and they were within the company. They were known as the Paranoids, and apparently Alex Stamos, who was hired as CSO. Went head to head with Mayer on this one.
Stamos is smart and good, and I like Alex.
And that's why. And the reason he left is apparently because they weren't taking security seriously. And then the news about the hookup with the intelligence agencies came in, and that looks even more like.
Well, let's stick with this breach because Yahoo at least knew about it in August and failed to inform Verizon until a couple of weeks ago, long after the sale. So they're in. Deep doo-doo because
you can
be
complicit and incompetent. It's important to realize that you can be both things. Yes.
they had a responsibility to disclose this to the potential buyers. They did not.
That doo-doo has a dollar figure attached to it.
Significant. Yeah. Maybe $1 billion. At least that's what Verizon wants back.
It could well queer the whole sale. I mean, Verizon aren't... My read talking to people at Verizon is that a lot of people at Verizon aren't that keen on this in the first place, and this could give them an ideal get-out.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, they absolutely could walk away at this point.
Either way, Verizon gets a better deal.
Yeah.
Verizon gets out or gets it a hell of a lot cheaper.
I don't know what the fee for abandoning the deal is. It's probably significant.
Oh, unless there's cause.
But if there's cause, that might go away.
Get out of jail free card.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that brand value, especially now when giving over data to third party, because when you transfer a company, you have to transfer all the personal data to what is basically a third party, that is the purchaser. And that's always a big issue as is. And now all that data is suspect or has about it, not suspect, it has about it now these cooties.
Very disappointing that it's apparently Marissa Mayer knew about it.
Yeah.
That's extremely disappointing.
It is... As you say, it's a combination of incompetence and whatever else. But I mean, it's interesting.
Malfeasance would be the word.
Bad things happen, but it's
how the company reacts to it that is important. And we've seen other companies react to these sorts of things. And this is just, again, an abysmal reaction. And that you can't walk away from. Something bad happens, you do the best thing possible. You treat your customers great. You try to solve the problem. And people sort of respect that. But if something bad happens and you make it worse, then that the damage is extreme.
Yeah.
Then,
a
week later, we find out that Yahoo complied with a federal request.
Oh, it did more than comply.
Well, it's been getting worse. So, apparently, this was approved by the secret court, the FISA court, but it probably shouldn't have been because it was clearly a phishing expedition. Apparently, Yahoo went through all Yahoo Mail, it looks like, looking for a signature for a malefactor that the feds wanted. Now, of course, when you get one of these letters, you can't tell anybody about it, and you pretty much have to comply, although many companies, including Twitter and Facebook and Apple, have fought these as hard as they can. There's no evidence that Yahoo fought it. Furthermore,
they did in the past.
They had in the past.
They fought against the national security letters, and they lost. And it looks at this point like they got another one of these things. Let's just get it done.
They spent a lot of money fighting these, and they said,
Opening the kimono, let's just take it off.
We're going to lose.
Much trouble.
We're going to lose. Why battle? But then they made it. Then this is unclear. So Reuters had this original story, but now there's further evidence that initially we thought, they just modified a spam filter to do a little bit more straining. No. Apparently, they wrote something akin to a rootkit Now, I'm unclear on this. Did Steve talk about this on Tuesday? I don't know.
I don't recall.
I think not, because
this
broke afterwards. So we'll talk about it on Security Now Tuesday.
That'll get fascinating.
The thing, at the moment, there's only one person who knows the truth of this, and that's Alex Stamos, and he's not talking.
Yeah.
Now, probably for very good legal reasons, because I'm presuming he got a gagging clause the second he left Yahoo. But he's the only person at this point in time who can tell us exactly what happened, because he was in charge of the servers when this apparently took place. So until we hear from him, everything else is speculation at the moment.
According to Motherboard, Yahoo engineers didn't merely modify spam. They built a tool, installed a rootkit on Yahoo's mail servers without telling anybody. Stamos and his security team found it and thought they'd been hacked.
Yeah.
And then we're told, oh, no, that's us. We did that on purpose. And it was buggy and poorly designed, and as a result exposed 300 million Yahoo users themselves to hacking.
I mean, that's what Google and Apple tell you. Well, they will never code against their own code, their own base, because you expose it to far more than just the people who legally want an access point to it.
Now, we should say these are anonymous sources, supposedly former Yahoo employees who told Motherboard this. So this is unconfirmed at this point. But that is.
It was interesting, because when we got in contact with Google and Facebook, and they both said exactly the same thing. Hell no, there's no way we would do this, even if we were instructed to by the government. Now, they've got deeper pockets than Yahoo, and they could probably afford to fight it. But this is just death for Yahoo's brand. I mean, bad enough lose half a billion email accounts.
What brand?
Well, okay, it still had some. You know,
you hear that from rank and file too. Like, people at Apple or Google will tell you that they would rather quit than ever do this sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's
all you have to do is find one guy who says, "Oh, that's an interesting challenge. I'll write that." Maybe not so good a programmer as it turns out, but anyway, it was apparently done. And according to Motherboard, this software would give the NSA or the FBI or whoever requested this effectively unlimited, undetectable access to, get this, all Yahoo users' data.
All content.
So not just email, anything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Thank you, Yahoo.
Who's still using Yahoo that they really want the information from?
Sorry, Renee.
No, I was just saying, like, you don't really hear the tech aficionados using Yahoo, you know, that much anymore. So I wonder who's, you know, how helpful is this data?
But as you point out, everybody had a Yahoo account.
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah, very true.
And also, it's not that, you know, it's older users, but older users sometimes have power. Who was was it John Brennan who was found to have an AOL account that he was still using?
Oh, yeah, I have somebody just last week who had a Yahoo account, so I couldn't believe it.
Well,
weren't some of the phishing attacks, like they used the security words they got off Wikipedia to hack into politicians' email on Yahoo and AOL and services
so,
like that?
And this may also explain why there's, you know, if you're going to get phished, it's going to be because you had a Yahoo Mail account. It has always been the worst for security, right? And I never could quite understand how. Well, maybe now we know. Let me ask you this, Renee. How do you delete your Yahoo account? There's no button.
There's no button, which is, you know, again, appalling in this day and age, because you want to give people the ultimate control over their data. But what you can do is you can go in, and again, I'm cribbing this from Steve, so correct me, Steve, if I've done anything wrong. You go in and you just delete everything. You just burn it all down. You delete all the mail. If you really care about it, you can download it to an offline service that you run on your own, you know, theoretically completely sealed computer system at home, but then you delete what's on Flickr, you delete what's on Yahoo Mail, you delete anything else that you have there, and then you just change the password to some big pseudo random blob that you don't write down anywhere, and that'll keep you from accessing that account again and anybody else, like 64 pseudo random or 32 pseudo random characters. You'll be safe for years to come, theoretically.
Wow. Wow. Maybe.
There is no security beyond the grave. You know, it's as simple as that.
Let's not forget, before Marissa Meyer, but long back, Yahoo was the company that gave information to the Chinese government, and a man spent 10 years in Chinese prison because of it.
Yeah.
This was their heritage. This was known. They got a lot of rightful crap for that. And then even after that, this company allowed this. Yeah. That's what's doubly shocking to me.
Yeah, very sad. Well, there you have it. It's going to be an interesting Security Now on Tuesday. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you guys. What a great show. I feel like we kind of cobbled it together.
Yeah.
We knew we were going to have Ian.
So we're merely cobbles here? We're merely cobbles?
No.
Nobody had to know. You could have said, oh, well, our guests are all here.
No, I like to be honest, but I think the spontaneous twits are often the best twits. And of course, it just happens that some of our best contributors.
I always love being at the big table on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Likewise.
There you go. That's a good way to think of it. It's Canadian Thanksgiving, so it's a half a big table.
Very polite table.
But it's very polite.
A good sense of humor.
Thank you for taking some time on your Thanksgiving Eve for Renee. We knew we could get Renee because he's always working. Those 100,000-word reviews don't write themselves. What are you working on right now?
We're actually doing a little bit of we did all the iPhone reviews, all the Apple Watch reviews. So now we're finishing the how-tos because iOS 10 and Watch OS 3 and TV OS 10 and Mac OS Sierra all landed at the same time.
Wow.
So we had to rewrite so many things. Yeah. We have a fantastic team now, but we're still slogging our way through all that.
I just found my iMac, my 2012 iMac died. And thanks to Glenn, who's visiting from Australia, he found out, or no, actually it was a Scooter X, found out that there was a recall on the 3 terabyte Fusion drives in those 2012 iMacs. I happen to have one of them, and apparently that's what happened. It just died while I was gone. So there's always something going on in the Apple world.
Technology barely works at the best of times, Leo.
Renee will be back on Tuesday for a great Mac Break Weekly. I look forward to that.
Meanwhile, Mark Zuckerberg's video has ended. I guess
it's time to eat the meat.
Now that's a video a lot more than 100,000 people would watch.
I really wanted to see Mark after about 5 beers.
I know.
He could have just done with a Masterpiece Theater for the debates. He could just sit there with his bottle.
Loose Mark could be great to see. Yeah.
Oh, so good. And maybe like Elvis, he could shoot the TV at the end of it. Jeff Jarvis, City University of New York, CUNY. He's a professor of journalism there. My God, if you could study journalism with Jeff Jarvis, wouldn't you want to? BuzzMachine.com is his blog. He's written all the greatest books, including What Would Google Do?, Public Parts, Gutenberg the Geek. You could find him at Jeff Jarvis on Twitter and every Wednesday right here with This Week in Google. Thank you,
I will
Jeff.
See you this Wednesday.
Thank you. Enjoy your debate. How will you be watching? With Twitter running in the background?
Oh, absolutely. I'll be tweeting the whole time.
Oh, you'll be tweeting. Good.
I'll be tweeting.
I'll be following. Yeah.
And then I have obviously some specific lists, including fellow Hillary fans.
What I want is all the most snarky,
Twitties,
and you also want the GIF makers, right? The animated GIF makers.
Well, last time I was on with a bunch of Hillary people.
Yeah.
And as the debate came toward an end, and Hillary did the oof.
That was a great GIF.
We all said, GIF. Give us a GIF right now. Give us a GIF. Can somebody do a GIF? Somebody, anybody do a GIF.
I didn't see her do it, but the Shaquille
O'Neal cat Hillary combination was magnificent. One of the reason that animated GIFs exist.
And I picked a bad time to give up airplane glue. Another wonderful meme. Let the memes begin in half an hour.
My favorite meme of the last 2 weeks was the Bill Clinton going up the Air Force One steps.
I haven't seen that one.
No, what's that?
So Obama comes out. They're leaving Israel after Sharon's funeral. Obama comes to the door of Air Force One and says, Bill, come on. And he comes back again. Bill, we got to go home. Come on. And he goes, well, third more time. Bill, I mean it. Come on.
But that wasn't a meme. That was real, right?
It was real. Bill go upstairs. So the meme that came after that was Clinton coming up holding a big balloon saying, sorry, I had to get my balloon.
It's always worth waiting for a nice balloon. Ian Thompson from The Register, great to have you. You'll be back Saturday.
Well, I'll be doing new screensavers next weekend, but then I'm currently planning to be staying strictly within the speed limits, of course, going back home to watch the debate. So no.
Well, come over to the house if you want. You can watch it with us if you'd like. It'd be fun to have a snarky Brit going, you Americans!
I know, but if you get a couple
of fools?
This is the independence you fought for? Okay.
Well, we just find it hilarious. You fought for independence against aristocracy, and now look at you. It's just
Lord.
One of those things.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks to a great live studio audience, somewhat diminished over the last 2 hours, but a few of you hung in there.
We bored them.
I don't know. It's a long show.
You're making it home for the debates.
If you want to be in the studio, you can. We have an open studio. We love having visitors. Just email tickets at twit.tv. And you can be here for the whatever live show happens to be on. Tickets at twit.tv. We'll send you directions to our secret destination. You can also watch the show live Sunday afternoons, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. We stream it, as we do with everything, 2200 UTC. If you can't watch live, though, we can always make on-demand versions available. Audio and video at twit.tv and wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Slacker, Google. You can ask your Echo to listen, and it has, I think we're on TuneIn. You can listen that way. But make sure you get every episode. Subscribe. That seems like the best way to do it. Thanks for joining us. I'm glad to be back, and I'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye.